And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear here and declare your independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, A from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, Freedoms Phoenix, .com.
Yes, good one. Yes, see.
Okay, what we're going to do today is in the second hour, we have Charles Perallo. He is running for LNC chair. Now, this is the Libertarian National Committee. The national convention is at the end of May. And we got, you know, a lot of stuff going on there. And I had not planned on going. I probably still, what we're going to do in the newspaper, they'll be in all the convention bags. And so I'll get to have my say. But I'm not really going to be talking about the campaigns or the candidates for or any of that stuff. It's more international in flavor. I'm trying to inspire that. And there's this libertarian thing is going worldwide and need to get on. Today is Tuesday. And what is the date? April 26th. Now, this may be a rerun on Thursday and Friday. So let you guys know if you're listening to this on Thursday and Friday or tomorrow's show, it's because we had a death in the family, and Donna and I got to go to Pennsylvania. Her brother's wife passed away Saturday. She had like some kind of a cancer thing that was, I can't remember what they called it, but it's a rare kind of something. But what they did over the past year, they, you know, of course, we were encouraging them to, you know, do natural, you know, the chemo and rain, all that kind of stuff. It's, you know, we discouraged that, but they did that, you know, because that's what, you know, a lot of people do. And it destroyed her immune system. And she got an infection and went to the hospital, and it just went really fast through her body without her immune system, and boom. And, you know, it just, you know, devastated her. And Saturday night she died. And she's only, I guess, about 50. They have a daughter in college, sophomore, Sarah, and Paul is graduating from high school just this next month. And it's just, I mean, man. So, at least one, if not two of my sons are going, we'll know more today. They're going to go ahead and go for the funeral Friday. And my other daughter was going to go, but they already had a whole thing going to Disneyland at the same time. So they didn't want to disappoint the children. But a tight family. You know, I love my brother and brother-in-law and my niece and nephew. And we spend during the Livevolution while I'm traveling all back east. I always made an opportunity to stop by and say, yo, what's up? And I am glad that we're going to go and get to spend time. It's so devastating. You lose your wife. Right when he was ready to retire early this next year. You know, this end of this year. He's retired. Man, we're going to get the RV. We're going to come visit. We're doing it up. We're ready to go. You know, yeehaw. And then, boom, this happened. Just terrible. So we're leaving Wednesday afternoon, and we won't be back until, I think it's Monday or Tuesday. And one of the disappointing things about that for this week is, for the show, is Trump Report on Thursday. We just got everything settled last night. I haven't even told Frank yet, so I got to tell Frank. I was thinking of having, I'm working on it. If Drew can come in and work the boards and everything, because there's like a lot of buttons, their head will explode if they have to push buttons and stuff. I was going to have Keith and Frank do it. Maybe we might. I'm going to try and work it out. See, maybe. Might come in for a training session, maybe, you know, on Thursday, do the Trump Report without Ernie. Now, wouldn't that be good? So, you know, we may do that. I'm going to try and do that. See if we can get him trained up and get set up and somebody help him do that. So we at least the audio, just connect into the, so not do the video or anything, just, you know, do the audio and into the networks and do that instead of a rerun. But this may be a rerun for Thursday. But we have two good guests, you know, that'd be interesting, timely. Charles running for LNC chair. And in the third hour today, we have a young woman that was one of our public relation PR people out of Beverly Hills that, you know, sends us guests every now and then. You know, sometimes I go, yeah, that'd be interesting. I'd like to talk to her. She's a teen that she was being called a fat whale at school. You know, I didn't think she was that heavy, but I mean, you know, you always got kids doing, yeah, you fat whale. So she used that and started raising money for SaveTheWhales.org. Yeah, well, I want to save the whales. So it was just it's an interesting story, and I would be interested in how she did this. Dee McMillan took the pain and turned it into something positive and has been very successful at it. So it'd be interesting to see how it was even done, you know, and how the people responded and how well she's done. So I think it's a, you know, save the whales. It's a good motivation to do it. Plus, you know, we just had last Wednesday at the discussion group that we have here in Phoenix, Mark Victor was the presenter, and he's really been on the last couple of years a kick. He read the China study, and it's about health and, you know, eating more vegetables, and, you know, different cultures around the world, why they don't have all these diseases and everything that we do. And it's just, you know, it's diet. It's processed, chemicalized. You know, that's what, you know, everybody's got cancer and doing, then, you know, starting to find out, and they knew, and the vaccines are having all kinds of problems and stuff, and oh my God, you did a movie about bringing this up, and the whole pharmaceutical industry comes down, you know, on the planet and gets and whatever. That was one thing. Robert De Niro, he had a son that what was the cancer that Melissa had?
Multiple myeloma.
Okay, which is what?
I read up on it a while ago, but I think it has to do with the blood and the bone, and it doesn't make red blood cells and or white blood cells, so they can treat it. I mean, she was expected to still live 20, 25 years, but just a simple infection that she got from them putting a PICC line in her turned overnight gone. So it's very unfortunate.
Well, when did she get the infection? It was from the PICC line?
I think it was a couple of weeks ago. Yeah,
and that's what did it?
She was doing treatment. She had radiation, and then when she was done with radiation for some tumor that had spread to her face, they were going to put her back on chemo, and I guess her platelets were low, and so they didn't want to do that until they boosted her immune system. Of course, you know, the wrong way. But so they put a PICC line in her, a tube. You know, it's like a permanent tube that you can feed things through an IV. And I guess she got an infection from that. And she was responding to the antibiotics, it appeared. But I guess there's a lot of other things that go on with multiple myeloma, which your liver's compromised, so it's not processing things correctly. And so what was happening, her lungs filled with fluid. They got 800 cc's of fluid out of her on Saturday morning, which is four cups. So she was basically drowning in that. Plus, her liver wasn't detoxifying the blood, so she was basically breathing carbon dioxide. You know, within 2 weeks, it just, yeah. So that part of it was unexpected. She was, you know, expected to do the cancer treatment and all of that for a long time, and we did, like you said, we tried to do, you know, give them information on naturopathic stuff, and I think they were interested, but, you know, you get scared, and
you know, after a while, I mean, you make it about, I mean, you just got to be sister and not, you know, right, get in the middle of whatever, but, I mean, it was, but we have a lot of friends, you know, that have, there's people who can't, we get our age, and there's people having stuff, and you just try to encourage, you know, natural, it's not because, you know, I mean, if I, you know, I got this finger infection of vibe splinter something, whatever, I need antibiotic, it gets bad. I'm not averse to, of course, I go get it from the feed store and do it myself. But, you know, the thing is that I, you know, it's not the first option. You know, heal thyself, man. I mean, dang. But none of this gets discussed this weekend. I mean, we're way past that. And just support your brother. Man. You guys, wow. We try and keep, go to health category on Freedom's Phoenix. I'll help you out.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Today is Tuesday, April 26th. We may be doing this as a rerun this week while Donna and I go back to Pennsylvania for the death of our sister-in-law. We're going to go ahead and tomorrow, the show will probably be a Friday. I just want to let you guys know you're used to listening to it live. And what I'm going to try and do is I'm going to try and set it up so that Dr. Frank and Keith and whoever, maybe Drew, can come in and help, or Gina can, you know, learn to follow a checklist or something, and have the Trump report without me. That would be awesome. You know, I think you guys deserve a Trump report without Ernie, you know, having his opinion. You know, that'd be interesting. I would definitely listen to that. I'm going to try and hook that up for you guys, because I would definitely like to hear Dr. Frank without me, you know, doing the Trump report. That'd be awesome. And, you know, I mean, it's a little technical stuff like playing. You know, I'm going to call him today and see what we can do. So, you know, that death in the family, this is the first time. I mean, I've had, we were married, just started having children. So this is like late 80s, early 90s. My cousin, my mom's brother's daughter, they had 15 kids. I mean, damn, you know, that was a Mormon thing. But, you know, they had 15 kids, and the third oldest, Donna, my cousin, she passed away from cancer, and she was battled it for a long time. It was bone cancer, and it was a thing. Then her younger brother, my other brother, Jonathan, he died from Hodgkin's, I think. That was bad. It was amazing, the support he had from his friends at school and everything. The day that he died, because his hair had been, you know, fell out from all the chemo, whatever he'd done, all his friends went over to his house and shaved their head. Well, right after they had done it, they're all shaved heads there. He started hemorrhaging from his lungs and he died. So that was, you know, it's not the worst way to go, you know, with your friends and family around. And his mom, you know, my aunt Harriet, she's just like, it's okay. You can go. Yeah, it was just. So that's the closest that I have, and it really hit me hard for Donna, because it was the first close somebody that I knew that wasn't an older, you know, relative or something, but someone, you know, that I knew growing up and everything that had died. I haven't even had, you know, friends or close, you know, friends or that I remember having this impact on me. And she looked so much like my sister. You know, and we're doing the viewing, and she looked just like my sister. I lost it. I was like, wait, this is way more painful than I thought. The pain, you know, the physical pain, that an emotional loss like that, I had not experienced that before. I mean, yeah, my dog died, and, you know, that really had a big impact, you know, when I was like 15 or so. I was real close to the dog and thought that was, you know, pain, and, you know, then bam. And I'm like, whoa, man, I don't know if you condition yourself against that. You know, you kind of, it did with my other subsequent dogs. I have a dog die. Dog, you know, I'm just not going to get that emotional. I go, that's you're lucky I even know what your name is. I mean, I kind of keep it at a distance. They're furry doorbells. They, you know, whatever. And there was a reason for that. There's so much pain involved with losing a pet that, you know, I just kind of, they're a pet. Then you have, like, people that are close to you go, and pain. And the biggest pain, you know, I love Melissa. She was great. And I, you know, the pain is just a pain I know her two kids and her husband are feeling. And I'm glad, you know, I just got to go be small footprint. You know, I go, I'm just there, man. I just, you know, I don't even have an opinion. And they know. And it'd be good to see family. And I'm just going to be very small. So this is, you know, kind of rough week. What I did do is I hadn't even told Marrakesh yet. I couldn't afford to, you know, the whole fam go and this, that. I had to, and they were really cool about it. It was, I don't remember who, Delta or somebody. They went ahead and converted changed the flight and didn't charge me the fee and did the bereavement rate and all this kind of stuff so we could all go and so on because you know, this is just more important. But what that does do is that frees me up. Maybe I can go to the I won't be $1 billion to go to the Libertarian National Convention, and I'm just I can't really muster up enough, you know, give a crap to do that either, especially since we have the paper there. But next hour we're going to have the one of the candidates running for national chair. Now there are others, of course, and these are the ones they just reached out. They, you know, put out, hey, we'd like to, you know, what? Fine, come on. But what we'll do is we'll use it kind of like he's a news reporter. Hey, man, who are all the guys? Hey, man, I'm not there campaign. I go, that's the deal. You know, just tell me what's going on because I just can't muster up enough. Give a crap. You know, I'm wow. I've been through this so much. I just know. But it'll be I run for national chair four times. And there was a reason why each time. And the biggest reason was, you know, just to keep them, you know, the flag waving for leave me aloneism instead of this, we got a compromise to be in and we get a big coalition of, you know, vote for us. And we went from 3% to 7%. I mean, you know, I kind of just, which would have been good, you know, but I'm the way to do it. Now we'll see. So the libertarian movement oftentimes is much bigger outside of the Libertarian Party. When you think libertarian, you don't really think Libertarian Party. I mean, a lot of us, I mean, hell, we were in it and stuff, and I don't think of Libertarian Party. There is going to be a leader. Sooner or later, somebody's going to see the power of this and not, or even have the money. It could be somebody with some cash and their freaking anarchist billionaire Bitcoin guy or something come in and do some butt whipping. Well, then we'll have something to talk about. There is a lot of people that, you know, positioning in the background, this thing running for U.S. Senate here in Arizona against McCain as a libertarian is still being negotiated. And don't have to make a decision until, like, next week. I mean, they still need time to get the petition signatures. They got, like, a month or something like that. But they just throw money at it and, you know, go get signatures. But I haven't said hell no yet, but I've been really working hard trying to find somebody else better than me to do it. And which, you know, not that hard, but the I mean, I'd have fun. We'd have some fun and we'd get it out and doing some whip ass. But, you know, Donna and the family, everybody else wants me to do it except my family because they know, you know, that it'll be a thing. And Dr. Tamburi, he really wants to do it. He's like, I'll do it. No, beat me up some. Get me some. But he's not experienced. I'm not sure. I said, are you sure, man? I want to make sure you know. I don't want to, you know, like, throw you in. One person there has demonstrated they really want to do it. And I'm just trying to make sure they be all hardcore and everything. Is Mark Victor. Mark Victor said, hey, man, how come you didn't talk to me? Well, you did against Flake in the U.S. Senate last time. You know, kind of, you know, you going to do it again? Yeah. So that might be a happening. So I'll call them in the break now just see if they worked out something over the week. We just been busy doing this other thing. So we'll go ahead and we'll talk about that. But I got top news for the rest of the hour. There's a bunch of stuff going on, man. Are we there yet? Yeah, well, we're getting there. All the stuff we've been talking about, we come back.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Mayor Hancock. Hello. Hello. Okay. Top news story. I just talked to Mark Victor. Tracy's wife, you know, is going to be kind of coordinating, doing whatever. So she's they're talking to, and she has a meeting with the Democrat executive director, former guy of the whatever, and doing the run McCain thing today. So I'm doing everything I can trying to not do it. But, you know, I definitely want to make sure it gets done. Got to have a Libertarian on the ballot running against McCain. Now, of course, the Democrats are, you know, that's the only way they think they're going to be able to win. But it's, I don't trust the system. And I go, no. Part of the negotiation, I do it, fine. Get me on the ballot, do all this kind of stuff, because the Republicans just passed laws to make it almost impossible for Libertarians to get. You can't get on without getting independent signatures. There's not enough Libertarians to meet the requirement, you know, which is a big part of lawsuit and all kinds of stuff going on. But what that means, a lot of guys are interested. I mean, some guys can run for Congress. Say, hey, you know, put us up for Congress, too. We'd do that, you know, because we just don't care. Yeah, I mean, we could do it. I mean, it's just, you know, a few thousand seconds ago. I mean, we do this stuff all the time. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter, because the economy is going to take a dump. And everybody always, whose fault is it? I don't know, the past decades of, you know, whatever. So I'm just not, everybody's going to get libertarianized. I guarantee freaking it. You know, it's just going to, because of the communication, which is why we've been pushing so much for decentralized everything. We had a story this weekend up that, what was it, the FBI or NSA, CIA, the A's, okay? They came out saying Snowden advanced encryption adoption by the people at least 7 years. They go, damn it. We were on track. We thought we were going to rule them, get them all corralled and pinned up, and they grew wings and flew away. You know, they said, damn it. You know, so this is encryption. Now, we had another article that we had up. Some of you may have missed it. You go to the Bitcoin category. Paul Rosenberg sent me an article. He goes, yep, you were calling it. Here it is. You know, Peter Todd, which you've had on, one of the core developers. We got to spend hours with him in Mexico and Acapulco last year, in 15, and got to drill in on him on a bunch of questions. Everything. Yep, core development. That's where it's going to happen. So I've been saying, you find the central point of failure. Where is it? It is in the developers actually change and work on Bitcoin. Oh, it'll be, you know, yeah, but the miners and the users and everybody's got to approve and it'll never have. Well, what do? They start incentives going after bribing, you know, whatever, you know, miners do it. They, you know, create their own, you know, they got, oh, and we control and we're done and we're going to do it this way. What do they want to do? They're working into where you have ID'd Bitcoin accounts, and only if they know who you are will they process your stuff. This is an attempt. They're trying to take over Bitcoin. And let me see, who's saying that's where it would happen? Let me think. Oh, yeah, it was me, okay? If they can, they are, or sure as hell want to and will if they can get away with it. So where is that? It's at core development. You know, so it's articles up there. Peter Todd's like, look, this is what they're doing, who they're doing it with. Here it goes. So this is the existential threat. What does existential threat mean? Extinction event. Okay, that's what it means. You know, the asteroid be a coming. So got to keep an eye on this. The fact that it can even happen, even over time, you know, and the erosion of, you put the right guys in the right places of the right of the right of the right, and you snatch, you know, freedom from the populace of the planet and kind of, it was hard, but if they can, they are. This is my point. So it's like make a bet. It's like taking candy from a baby, man. It's like with, you know, Dr. Frank and the Trump. I go, look, if they can do what it's just, well, can they? Well, it'd be hard. And they go, can they? Jeb. I know what's going to happen if Jeb comes back during. I mean, you know, it's like, Ernie, how did you know? So I just, because these guys, man, they're just so predictable. So I'm concerned about that. You know, so I'm still, a lot of people, you know, oh, I know what I could do. There is big controversy on BitClub. You know, Joby Weiss, good friend, had him on the show. Yeah, I guarantee you, if you lose money, I'll take care of it. And kind of, okay, fine, you guarantee, I'll do it. It's been making pretty good. It is a multi-level kind of forced rebuy of more mining equipment that mines Bitcoin. Okay, BitClub. You get $500, you get a share, and you buy so much equipment, and over the year that it or the contract's like two years. You know, it's 600 days now. So 600 days, and I got one that was 1,000, so I probably came out better. But you go 600-day contract, and the money that you, or Bitcoin that you mine, your portion of it, that you can, you get a certain amount, certain amount of that goes back into forced reinvestment. It's forced reinvestment. It's like, yeah, I keep buying your Amway toothpaste or something, you know? You buy more mining. So it's constantly reinvesting back into more mining equipment. So you got the latest, greatest, whatever, and they buy it big chunks of, I turned on my sea container full of, you know, blades of processing, whatever. So they do that. Then the part that you can take out, all right, that part that you can take out, you know, as you mine, and I think on the first pool, it's like you force reinvestment of like 40% back, something. So I did the 3,500 thing. You know, it's like, you know, I get the, you know, three different pools of the whatever. It's $3,500. So I go in and I say, all right, I got it. There it is. It was 9.26 Bitcoin or something. And it was like when it was at 377, I think is what the price was then. So it goes up, but I don't calculate it at, you know, the price of Bitcoin now. It's like $100 more than what it was before. I still calculate it at the price it was because it's how many Bitcoin I got. I just kept the Bitcoin and made that advance. You know, I'm losing money if I go put it somewhere else. I'm not making, you know, the Bitcoin back. At the end of the contract, it gives me more pools that extends it. And some people just take and set it, let it ride. They just keep it on black or whatever. They just let it, you know, build up, as invest as much of it back in. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to get my Bitcoin back as quickly as possible. I wanted to see that the portion that I could take out that's in my wallet to take, is it or is it not coming back at a rate that by the end of the contract, I have more than what I put in? Yes or no? That's all I want to know. Okay. That's what we're doing. Now there's all this other ancillary stuff. I got proof of stake coin in there called Club Coin that comes with it. And I got like, you know, got, you know, quite a bit, over 1,000 something worth of that. Then I got the other people that sign up, you know, that go under me or something. There's a couple, you know, they're doing that because they do it. And I had like 700 something people down on one leg, and then the other one's for me to do, and I just don't even play with it. You know, we're testing. Roger Ver comes on, very critical of it. Everybody's critical. Everybody, no, it's Ponzi. You know, Ponzi is you have to get other people to invest in it. The money that we're pulling out is what is being produced from the mining, and it's more per day than, you know, what it takes for me to get the Bitcoin back. So I'm going, so far, it's doing well. That was not my concern. My concern is what it always is. It's operations. Yeah? You buy 15 gazillion C containers of more computing stuff, and you got in kind of, yeah, who's the guy doing it? Who's plugging it in? Who's running it? Where's it at? It's in Iceland. You know, they got a server farm. Well, who's the guy? I go, it's operations. It's going to be that. Oh, what about embezzlement? What about somebody, well, security? Well, we had Shapeshift. Eric Voorhees, the big brain box guy, kind of, ooh, does Shapeshift, where you just have any digital currency. It can be exchanged for any digital currency, and it kind of tumbles around. Yeah, it's gone. Okay? They don't know that. This has got big threat to the man. They had, you know, like 300-something Bitcoin stolen. Now, it wasn't from anybody's account. It was from their hot wallets to be able to settle trades and so on. It was theirs. But somebody, and they're like, what the heck? And then it happened again, right? Where they were in an investigation. What? It was internal. It was a corrupt guy inside. He wrote a full article. So, I mean, this is how we know who it was. This is what, I mean, it's kind of lost. And then one guy was selling. We kind of, you know, were tracking and look, and we see you, and exchanges weren't processing. So this guy in Russia, you know, supposedly, that goes in, hey, man, for a couple of Bitcoin, you release these. I'll tell you what the guy did and told me kind of how he did it. Wrote the article on it. Shapeshift. It survives. It works. But they learn something. You got to be, I mean, extra careful. That's what I'm worried about. So if it goes the full, like, 1,000 days with me and I made out and I do good, test the proof. We're going to find out.
This is your Roberts & Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Monday, gold is $10 higher at $1,238 per ounce. Silver is up 10 cents at $17.10 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $459. With all the turmoil in currency markets, it's normal that gold, silver, and Bitcoin are all higher as cash loses its appeal. Give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied.
Okay, here's some of the news I just want to get out of the way, and we'll do the Bit Club thing, and you'll understand what I'm doing and why, and the criticisms everybody's having, whatever, and we'll see. All right. Footage released of police shooting marijuana suspects from a helicopter. Now, what happened is the incident involved a pickup truck loaded with undocumented immigrants hidden beneath a dark blanket. So they go, the DPS crew, Department of Public Safety, I guess I'm, what state was this? You know, so it's a border, I'm sure. DPS sounds like Arizona. They're saying, we got a black tarp with bundles, believing the truck was smuggling bales of marijuana. Eventually, one of the troopers opened fire, disabling the tires, learning three men had been hit, only one survived. So they got marijuana, let's kill them. I mean, you know, shoot them from the helicopter. That was, ooh, that's bad. This is a big thing. You know, that's military style tactics, shooting those Waco thing. Were they shooting from helicopters? Oh, my God. Okay. Well, yeah, get used to it. And this is what happens. All right. Doug Casey warns it's the next stage of the Greater Depression. The economy is going to be very, very bad. I agree. The men behind the curtain are being revealed. CEO says real world pricing will return to gold, silver, and commodity markets. Deutsche Bank and you know, a bunch of these other big banks have where, yeah, we're manipulating silver and gold, and you know, what'd you think was happening? Get over it. Well, it's all of us, you're crazy, you conspiracy. They can't, you would never be able to. No, you can't forever, you know, but they have. So, gold and silver manipulation. Silver's down. Good. I get to buy more. I mean, you know, I just know. I mean, how can you not know? Everybody's going, how'd you know? I'm like, how did you not know? I mean, you know, it's whatever. So we just buy silver. The smart meters causing tidal wave of mysterious illnesses that strike people in their own homes. That was a real popular article on Freedom's Phoenix. 10 unexpected benefits to being a psychopath. You know, this is where Dr. Frank Tamburi comes in. He's got y'all primed because, man, this was a popular article. And it went on, you know, some interesting things. You know, are psychopaths really better looking? Yes, they are. You know, are they better at reading people? Yes, they are. Are they better conversationalists? Yes, they are. Do they work better under stress? Yes, they do. I mean, you know, and why and so on. So it was an interesting article and you should take a look at it. All right. Now, let me go ahead and you know, I just want you guys to understand there is a woman and yeah, she's pretty out there. She didn't say don't say my name. I asked her I was going to read this out, but Kathy Cuthbert. Now, she got burned with the Gulch chili that wound up being a scam of some guy doing. No, they weren't paying attention. You know, Berwick and these guys went, you know, and Joby Weeks from Bit Club. So his association with Gulch chili, you know, that well, first day, whoa, anything these guys do, we know, hell no. So for 18 months, she's been working on suing and getting back and money and doing, trying, whatever. So Berwick, Weeks, you know, Ben Swan, you know, Tali, Luke Radowski, Tatiana, you know, it was a bunch of people, you know, Jordan Page, you know, went down, Wendy McElroy, you know, was heavily invested in that. And a lot of the people, there was a pent up demand for can't we just go somewhere and leave me alone-ism. My biggest skittishness on this thing is because I happen to know that in Argentina, there was a problem with getting water rights. And if you didn't get the water rights to do kind of, that was really what was the big problem. And you had all these little, you know, governors of and politicians of levels of you get to do. And if you're not in with that. And so my first question was, okay, what's this, this, and this? Because, you know, in Argentina, we had that problem. This was in Chile. Well, Chile, there was another place, too, but we knew the same questions to ask because it's kind of the same culture and the same way that they, you know, allow for whatever. Because we went through this and I think it was, you know, we learned from Doug Casey and his Café Jaté thing. And then it went to Chile. There was another friends of ours that had land and they went through this problem, and then sold out the other people that wanted to deal with that problem. So when Berwick and them were promoting Gulch Chile, we knew they asked the same questions. They didn't have answers. I'm like, no, they wanted me to go down and be part of them. And I'm like, nah, I'm good. It went bad. So anybody that had association with this, they're like, see, you know, these guys, we wouldn't have put money in if we didn't get the endorsement of these people. So my doing Bit Club, the point she's making is that by you even doing Bit Club, You know, you're setting people up. I mean, do you know that you're influential and people thinking it's cool and they should go do it? And I'm going, well, let me be very clear, okay, what my goal is and how this is, you know, being done by me. So I got to be public about this so you guys understand. I'm calculating everything at $377 Bitcoin since that's what I bought in at. I get paid back in Bitcoin, so that's what I'm focused on. Increase in price is cool too, but I don't look at the price because I'm already, you know, when it shoots up that much, you already made money, you know, but that's not the point. I want my Bitcoin back because I could just let it sit there, all right? I've updated my previous evaluations of Bitcoin's performance below because I keep track of this and I just kind of updated it and shared it with her, which has done well so far. But my real concern is over time. There are always internal risks when dealing with any company, so a 1,000-day test will be very telling. Every 1 to 2 weeks, I earn 0.1 Bitcoin and I immediately pull it out and secure it at my Airbits wallet. I'm still testing, and its return on investment is more than enough to make back the investment over the contract so far. I need to get back $350 a day because it's 1,000 days, $3,500, $3.50 a day I make, I'm good. 0.009283 blah, blah, blah Bitcoin at $377, boom. That's the break even in Bitcoin on a 1,000-day contract. The contracts have been reduced to 600 days, and I got the 1,000-day contract a few days before the change. 1,000-day contracts were making too much money, I guess. And after 76 days, I'm at $391 a day that I can immediately take out. Now, that's just a part I can take out. I make more, but it's a forced reinvestment thing. It buys more shares, but I don't care about that. Okay, all this multi-level, you know, you get people, I don't care. I just want to know what money I can take out. It's all I'm counting. You know, that's why I'm doing this. And the thing is that the 600 day, when it goes to 600 day, it's about break even. So that was the point. They changed it. Oh, they're making too much money. I mean, we want the extra money to be in getting people in, all that kind of crap. You know, but I don't care about that. 3,500 invested and now trending at 3,910. All right. That means I'm going to get back more for the Bitcoin I can take out. That is not part of the reinvestment requirements. This is all at 377 per Bitcoin, which can go up or down. Now, I was credited quite a bit more, but this is what I can take out now. When the total in my wallet reaches 0.1 Bitcoin I can take, I drain it to my Airbits Bitcoin wallet. I earned 1.22 Bitcoin so far. That's $462, 76 days at $6.08 per day, minus repurchase of more goods. Withdrawal amount, 0.78837 so far, 297. This is the number I pay attention to. What I can take out now. I don't care about the reinvestment. I don't care about, you know, the club coin. I don't care about the other people's time. I don't care. I just want to know what I can take out of the mining now. Repurchase of more pools is like half a Bitcoin so far, and that pays me now too. So if they, you know, as it makes more investment and more pools, I get, you know, extra as it starts working for you. So I suspect that the per day amount will continue to go up and why many are reinvesting their Bitcoins to get as many shares as possible. But this only works if they stay operational. Only time will tell that story. See, a lot of people, they're not taking it out. They're just reinvesting 100%. Just keep building it up. Oh, it's a big giant. It's gone. Okay. So I'm half expecting that, you know, something that's always a black swan of, you know, like Shapeshift got hacked or something. Or these guys, it's operations. It always comes down to operations. Where's the central point of failure? That's what I'm trying to find out. So far, it's doing what it promised, and then some. But I got in before the contracts changed from 1,000 to 600. I don't know if the formula changed, but it would seem that they changed the day so that the model didn't pay out more than was made by the computers to encourage the signing up of more people as a way to make their real money. Because that's where everybody's making all this big money, is multi-level crap. The first $500 pool, it looks like at 600 days, I would get back about $100 extra. You know, but that and a little more would have, you know, gone back into more shares and generation more Bitcoin, money making money. But I wasn't interested in the multi-level aspect of this right now or the generation of more shares for more Bitcoin production. I wanted to have it demonstrated over a period of time that it would produce as much Bitcoin as I put in over the contract. At the current rate, I'm getting about one Bitcoin more and the repurchase of more shares that will likely result in more mining shares at the end of the contract than when we started. And there's, you know, more to this and so on, and maybe now do this another time we do on this. But the bottom line was, is that it's a test. I'm willing to risk this to just see. It's always going to come down to the quality of the weakest link, and that is operations. It's the people. She is right about that. Kathy, yes, you are absolutely correct, and that is what we're going to find out. I'm like, fine. I got a personal guarantee. Gobi goes, no, I'll make sure you won. Go, all right, done. I can do a test for that. It's working out. And what I'm really concerned is the method at which it increases the processing power of the forced investment. They're solving a lot of blocks.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Tuesday, April 26th, 2016. Silver is trading at $16.93 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,234 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $464. Antiwar.com reports over the weekend the Saudi coalition, primarily troops from the United Arab Emirates, advanced into the port city of Al-Mukalla, capturing it from Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. At the time, the report was there was comparatively little fighting and Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula basically pulled out. The narrative changed on Monday with a statement from Saudi leadership claiming that more than 800 Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula fighters were killed in the first hours of the military operation and the rest fled. It's never been clear how big Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula is or how many fighters they had in Mukalla. Mukalla is the largest city Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula held, but only one of several in Yemen, and with indications of an outflow of fighters into Hadramaut province, it's hard to imagine 800 people getting killed in a few hours, let alone in a way that locals interpreted as little fighting. Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula seized Mukalla from the Shiite Houthis during the initial Saudi invasion of Yemen when the Houthis had to withdraw most of their troops to defend against the Saudis. This is the first significant effort by either side to recover the city in the past year. Saudi officials also reported an oil terminal next to Mukalla was captured. When her plush and comfy life suddenly and unexpectedly fell apart, Brooke and her dog Cloud set out to defy the odds. If this is a man's world, as they say, living on the streets is no place for a young woman. One day she awoke in the Redwood Forest and realized she had become a hobo and would ultimately come to know exactly what it means to survive. How to Be a Hobo by Brooke Willett is available from Amazon.com and all major bookstores. UPI reports whistleblower Edward Snowden, by leaking classified data 2 years ago, contributed to the acceleration of sophisticated encryption methods that militants are using to hide their communications, according to National Intelligence Director James Clapper. The rapid advancement of commercially available encryption software is proving to be a difficult obstacle in detecting potential threats, he said at a breakfast hosted by the Christian Science Monitor. Clapper said of the rapidly advancing encryption, "From our standpoint, it's not a good thing," adding that the software has had profound effects on the government's ability to gather intelligence. Clapper said the NSA believes Snowden, who exposed the agency's massive phone surveillance program in 2014, has helped accelerate encryption technology by about 7 years. In his remarks, Clapper acknowledged that there needs to be a balance between intelligence capabilities and guarding against law enforcement invasion of privacy, echoing Obama's prior statement about absolutist positions on the matter. Clapper called the balance a holy grail the U.S. intelligence agency is seeking. Also on Monday, Clapper echoed predictions by the White House and a former Senate Intelligence Chairman that a decision should be made by June on whether to declassify the 28 pages of a 2004 report by the 9/11 Commission. For nearly 40 years, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has been a trusted source for buying and selling precious metals like gold and silver. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and have permanently removed the minimum purchase amount for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Roberts & Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on buying and selling precious metals and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 800-874-9760 or visit online at rrbi.co. Reuters reports Cleveland officials have agreed to pay $6 million to settle a lawsuit filed by the family of Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old who was shot dead by a police officer in 2014, according to documents filed in federal court on Monday. The city admitted no wrongdoing in the shooting, and Rice's family agreed to drop the complaint against two officers, including the one who shot the boy, according to U.S. District Judge Dan Aaron Polster, who mediated the settlement. Tamir Rice was shot in a local park by Timothy Lohman after he and another officer, Frank Garmbach, responded to reports of a suspect with a gun. An investigation revealed that Rice, who died a day after being shot, had been holding a replica gun that shoots plastic pellets. Cleveland Mayor Frank Jackson said at a news conference he would not elaborate on the settlement or how the city would pay for it. The American Civil Liberties Union said the case highlighted the need to reform the criminal justice system. The two officers have been on restricted duty since the shooting and will remain so through an internal police review. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
The military's newly developed unmanned Pentagon spokes drone completed its first live mission today, successfully carrying out a press conference on the war in Iraq. The mobile press engagement unit is being hailed by Pentagon officials as a revolutionary advancement in protecting military personnel.
The spokes drone proved effective at neutralizing reporters' questions about 85% of the time.
Many officials say the unit has the potential to save countless careers. Using a high-tech gimbal camera and microphone system, the unit tracks reporters' movements and audio output, then analyzes the data to assess the threat level.
It formulates and deploys an effectively vague response.
We have taken away a number of the enemy sanctuaries and gained initiatives in the areas. Eileen.
Military technology experts see the unit as adaptable to a wide variety of treacherous interview scenarios. They estimated it could even withstand situations too hostile for any human spokesman to bear, such as anti-war documentary interviews.
This is the Onion News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Independence. I'm here in the Stancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, at F&B, EAUT, full studios of Freedoms of the Nazarenes, Phoenix.com. All right. Charles Perallo, he's running for LNC chair, Libertarian National Committee chairman of the chairman. You know, the chairman. Well, he's a younger guy. You know, he's got a site, beanlibertarian.com. Beanlibertarian.com. Good looking young guy up there, gonna give it what for, but what's his philosophy? What's he advocating? How's he gonna do it? You know, it looks like I see him there with a Google Glass, so he's got a little techie, you know, in him. So let's find out. Maybe we can get some news on his competition. He can tell us how bad and evil they are and support him. So, of course, once we start down this road, then we got to have the other guys on, too. If they want to come on, we'll work it out. But let's first say hello to Charles Perallo. Am I saying it right, Charles?
Yeah, you got it. You got it right on the first try.
All right,
I'll say thanks for calling me good looking. Regarding bashing the other candidates, though, I'm going to try and keep this totally positive. I don't think the Libertarian Party deserves division, especially now. If you look at the major parties, I think that they've done enough of it for America, and I don't think the LP needs any more of that.
You know, I agree. I got my opinion. We'll talk in the break. You know, but it's first thing I want to do is I want to get to know you. You know, this is you're how old?
I'm actually 21. I would be the youngest. I would be the youngest chair for the LP.
Score at 21. Damn. Okay. So
it's actually very interesting. I've been active in basically what happened is I grew up in Rock Hill, New York, which I moved to Manhattan when I was 18 years old. I wanted to do that to become an inventor, filed my first patent around that age. That patent was in the exercise equipment space, which we've actually gone to some early manufacturing on that recently. I got really involved in Bitcoin. I was involved in a location called the New York Bitcoin Exchange, which we launched 100 feet from the New York Stock Exchange.
I remember this.
In 2013. And I was on the founding team to that. We did a lot of trades, a lot of exchanges. So that's how I got active. The last year, I was originally more of a Rand Paul fan. Honestly, I was not looking that much in the Libertarian Party. I voted for Gary Johnson. I voted for Warren Redlick. I voted Libertarian in pretty much every election. But I was on the Rand team because I can deal with compromise occasionally.
And wait. While you're saying that, we'll get right back to that. Donna has a picture up here of you standing there with Rumsfeld. What's that about?
Oh, honestly, when it comes to Donald Rumsfeld, I went to an event. I got a photo with him. I kind of just told him, I disagree with you on everything, but, you know, I'm just going to take this for the profile picture. I have no support for Donald Rumsfeld. I think that he was the worst Secretary of Defense possible. But you know what?
I think I'll
profile picture.
I understand, but I think I'll delete.
I mean, if you want, like, I have some photos with Gary Johnson.
No, I understand. I know. I got Barry Hess, the perpetual governor candidate last four or five. Like, man, he's got pictures with everybody. I mean, damn.
Yeah, no, I mean, when it comes to first off, I'll say this: if we want to talk about the George W. Bush administration, it was the worst presidency since FDR, I'd imagine. I mean, we bash Barack Obama. The good thing about Barack Obama is he doesn't really seem to do anything. So, I mean, with Bush, he started these two miserable wars. He had the Patriot Act. He turned a balanced budget into a massive deficit. So, you know, Barack Obama is a terrible president, but I think George W. Bush is the worst one.
Yeah, you know, well, Barack just continued, failed, whatever. They're all the same. Okay, so go ahead and finish where you were kind of Rand Paul in it, and then what?
Okay, so I was on the Rand Paul team for the most part. I had a lot of issues with Rand's campaign, but I thought it would get us somewhere. It didn't, and I also co-founded a project called BeLibertarian.com. So we wanted to do more articles. We had a Facebook page, which I had an old page with 2,500 likes, and then we had a couple other pages. So we had 6,000. Now we're at almost 50,000, and this has been starting since October. So we've grown a lot. We have a team about 20 people. And because of that, I got very active in the Libertarian Party. And I moderated the Philadelphia Libertarian Party debate. I've done interviews with pretty much every candidate running. And I've really looked at the party and how it's structured, and the message is not the problem. I'm a total libertarian. I agree with them on fiscal issues, social issues, military issues. The problem is, it's just this party is kind of in the past in terms of how they manage things. I mean, honestly, the website that they have for the National Party, I've looked at the website, and I honestly, like, we actually offered our team at Being Libertarian, we offered to just redo it for them for free. And they were kind of like, well, that's going to be a lot of confusion and work. And they were kind of just down on that. But the website is terrible. It looks like it was built out in 1998. And then you have people running for governor of some, like, I don't know, Tennessee, Texas, or whatever. And they're using at Hotmail emails. There's no connection between the local chapters. So I was looking at all of this, and I said, there's no training courses with anyone. And I said, you know, I need to join in on this race because, I mean, I called up local chairs, state chairs, and nobody really thought any of the national chairs in the past few years have done anything memorable. So I kind of just said, I'm not going to change the platform. I want to go in just making a unique approach, really focusing on the technical ends, which I have more experience in, and also perhaps trying to work a little bit more with Republicans and Democrats. I know that sounds like a sticky issue to some people, but I've really looked at it. And I feel that that there are a lot of Ron people, even Ron Paul people, and some Bernie Sanders people, which you can get to come your way. So I would want to establish sort of a Libertarian Party affiliate status. So there's a lot of people who want to vote in the Republican primary. They want to vote in the Democrat primary. Let's have it so that they could not be a member of the Libertarian Party, but we can come up with some sort of affiliate status where they get to stay in contact with us. They can come to events to get information. And ideally, they give us money, and we do that, and that's a way to grow our base right there. So that's one thought. The other thought, I'm working on an LP app. So basically, if you're a libertarian, you download an app. It'll connect you to every libertarian.
Oh, my God! Libertarians don't have an app?
We don't have an app. I mean, the party does not have an app. Honestly, I think like a pizza place near me has an app, and it's a one location. They have an app. The Libertarian Party does not have an app.
I'm hip, man. I've been singing this song for a while. Okay, so this is, but what I'm really looking at, this is all great, cool. You know, long story. We'll talk about it in the break. But I tell you this, I need to know what the core philosophical position is. You know, thou shalt not break. You know, principle of what?
Well, when it comes to the principle, I mean, the non-aggression principle has been talked a lot with Austin Peterson and so on. You know, I take the non-aggression principle pledge. I've looked at it. I think some libertarians try and make it the anarcho-capitalist pledge. I don't believe in that necessarily. I think it's more of the pledge that you believe in good government on what you believe in good government. You could
there is such a thing.
You know, well, I don't know if there is such a thing. I mean, I think there's some governments that are not bad for the time being. I think that if you look at, sometimes, you know, if you look at, Puerto Rico with Luis Fortunio cutting spending, you look at deregulation in Sweden, I don't know if governments are good, but they can be less bad. You look at America to some extent. I mean, America, I think, has done a couple of good policy choices over the last few years.
Okay, we're going into break. When we come back, we'll get to know Charles Peralta, a little bit more. 21. Coming in with some skills and resource, we're going to get some. Well, do we want them to? Oh, we're going to find out. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. BeanLibertarian.com. Go check it out. All right. Let me give you the Evelyn Wood version, which means speed reading. Okay, real quick. Do you know who I am at all?
I've heard of you. I don't know you that well, though.
Okay. You're young, but, this is the deal. I run for national chair 4 times, okay?
Oh, wow.
In 04, 6, 8, and 10. In 04, because the Libertarian Party, little war's okay, Afghanistan, Neil Bortz gets up convention in Atlanta, and we need to. So I went with Charles Goyette, you may know him, Ron Paul's America, 120 stations, big clear channel, guy kind of anti-war. Hell no, not going to. And he goes and speaks against it at the same time. We had another room. We did a newspaper. Go there. We're going to do another newspaper. It'll be 1,200, copies in all the convention bags that'll be in this year's convention from Freedom's Phoenix. We do a newspaper, so that'll be in the convention bags. I get to have my say. Okay. Now I didn't plan on going, but we'll see. The point is that in 04, it was definitely, hey man, there's some anti-war libertarians around here somewhere in there. That was the point. In 06, they stripped the platform. I was there. Are you guys freaking kidding me? You're going to open it up for anybody else. But you stripped this platform trying to make nice.
Oh, that's how we got Bob Barr.
Exactly. It was the way we got Bob Barr. They did it for Bob Barr. Okay.
Ooh.
So then in 08, we get Bob Barr. Oh, it'll just be the Bob Barr Levolution. I'm like, God, you guys are stupid, man. You don't get it. So I, run in Denver. I speak at the, go look at the archive, tape, video, whatever. You get it. Then we have, then in 10, I ran to make sure that I was really running against Wayne Allen Root. Okay, I was making sure that, hell no, okay?
Well, first off, can I just point out, Wayne is a scam artist.
Yeah, all of us, we know, we get it. So the point is that I was saying a lot of the same things you were. I was the young kid. I'm 55 now. So I coming up in the 90s, I was in my 30s, going through all this. I'm like, what the hell? And I demonstrated, okay, let me show you what can happen with spontaneous order. Let me show you if you're just a resource. Let me show you if you give people the freedom to do what they want. The goal is blah, 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 blah. And I'm the one that created the Ron Paul Levolution logo, and that started here with Freedom's Phoenix out of Phoenix. So that Levolution, I'm the one that created that. So the thing is we go into the 08 convention in Denver, and I'm going, everything that I told you that could happen, being a resource, being a hub, being the freedom to do, how come we don't have this kind of activity in the Libertarian Party for the very philosophy that Ron's doing? Oh, because within 6 months after you strip the platform, he's on running as a Republican on it. I'm going, and it's very successful. What do you think happened, you morons? Okay? So when you come in to do this, all the technical and advancement and doing, even working with, right now, the Democrats are negotiating with us this week. They've been on my butt for a couple of weeks to run again. I ran against John McCain in 04. So they want me to run again, and the Democrats are going to pay for me to get on the ballot, give me a gazillion dollars for whatever, 1,000 signs, all that. Why? And be open about it. Yep, they're paying, going to, kiss my butt because it makes it more likely that the Democrat can win with a Libertarian run the campaign. My senior editor, Pal Gamo, ran for Congress. The Democrats win because he's in there. The Republicans freak out. They change the laws. The lawsuits are going on. Blah, blah, blah. Been there, done that. Got shitload of T-shirts. Okay? Now, the thing is that when we, yeah, any interest, you, I've even talked to, I had Austin on the show. I get it. You know, but he's another young guy like you, just kind of going to get some. All right? If I was in charge and everybody gave me 5 minutes and $5 and we changed the planet because I can, you know, then you have you doing that. It's next generation is coming, but what are we getting? That's what we're going to talk about here. We're coming back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. Oh, another independence declaring kind of individual, Mr. Charles Perallo, beanlibertarian.com. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe. We'll see. You know, this is, see, I don't have a problem working with, you know, everybody's going, oh, well, the Republicans or Democrats will get credit for passing the, you know, anti-gun control, the kind of freeing people or whatever, and they'll get, like, I give a crap. You know, I'm, so, you know, let them take credit. I just want to be free. I got grandkids and crap, man. I don't care. I just want the philosophy to get out there. That's what the Levolution was about. We're just like, how long can we keep Dr. Paul up at that podium? Now they go, Ernie, how come you're not doing this with Rand? How come you're not out doing the Rand thing? I go, because doesn't matter if he's up at that podium. He's not saying it! Say it! Say it! And he doesn't say it. Why do I care if he's up there or not? He's not saying it. He's just being kind of, you know, I'm a, you know, not as neocon, or I'm a little neocon, whatever the hell he was doing. You know, and I'm just not into it. The position of national chair is at least as, if not more important than the presidential candidate. Presidential candidate only get attention for a few months of doing national chair. They can really upgrade and do. But the problem he's running in, you know, hey, we can give you a new web page. We can do a spontaneous order of, or we can have it and controlled and supply resources. Right? Been through this. The reason they don't do it is because they don't want you to do it for free, dummy. They want to do it for somebody, make some money with their buddies and kind of coordinate if I did it, and then we got a cut. You know, this is free. You know, how do we make money on free? So you're coming up against the old school of the party of debt. But what happens is, like the Koch brothers or some other money, they can own the Libertarian Party for $10,000, $100,000. We can do and get the ballot stats for whatever we want to do later, and kind of just exactly what the Democrats are doing here in Arizona. They need them Libertarians on there for them to have a chance of winning. So we're just kingmakers, and kind of, and there's a lot of power that the philosophy has, but how would it be used? You know, a 21-year-old Charles Perallo, when I was 21, I was like, freaking, man, I could do this better too. I know, and then you learn different things, but it doesn't mean it's not. It's a bad thing. I'm like, Charles, man, you got the right philosophy. Bring on your talents. Let's go kick ass. But if it doesn't have a no-compromise, libertarian, philosophical, we oppose the cult of the omnipotent state, this idolization, this worship of this all-powerful, all-knowing, you know, Snowden going after thing. I mean, you know, I'm just, you know, what the hell are we for? Defending the rights of the individual. So as national chair, I need to know, man, what is it you're going to defend? A better website, or a better website to espouse what principle? I need to know what is at the core of this. Why do you even care at 21?
Well, I mean, first off, I've cared since I was about 14 years old. I've been active in this stuff for years. But I think my, if you go on my website, charlesperallo.com, where I lay out the platform for the, like, what I'm doing, I think that the logo that I've chosen, the slogan, kind of says it best, which is higher standards, same principles, which that means at the core of all of this, I advocate what the Libertarian Party advocates for. When it comes to social issues, I am pro-legalization, I am pro-choice, I am pro-gay marriage. When it comes to economic issues, absolute laissez-faire capitalist, end the Fed, end the minimum wage, end Davis-Bacon, free trade, all of that. And of course, I'm anti-war. Unlike some other people, I would say Bob Barr in 2008. But I look at it saying, higher standards. So what I'm really about is, and I think as the role of chairman, I don't want to tell the candidates what they have to advocate for, because that's not really what my right is. What I want to do is I actually want to build a party where people are, you know, given the resources that matter to them. We don't really do that. In fact, I ask these local chairs, does the national party really help them out at all?
Nothing.
And no, they don't. They don't. They really say they've not even noticed it. In fact, I mean, when I was on the phone with somebody in Michigan, I won't give the name, but they actually said, and they're involved in the LP, they said they will vote for anybody besides the current chairman. And I I've not spoken to Nick. I don't really know much about him. But, I mean, the attitude I was given by this person was he's been chairman for 2 years, and the biggest change has been a logo with the LP and nothing else. So I'm looking at it saying, and also we talked about money and paying for a lot of the stuff I want to do when it comes to web reforms, building an app and doing these kind of things. All of the reforms I laid out, I can do very cheaply. And the reason for that is that unlike the other three people, Mark Rutherford, Brett Pojanas, and Nick Sarwak, I'm the only one that actually has built technology before. So what I can do is I can go and contact a bunch of my friends in the hackathon community, which those are just programming groups, and I could say, hey, I want to build a Libertarian Party app that is going to connect all these people. We have hundreds of thousands of registered libertarians. We have millions of active libertarians. And then we have all these little sub-movements. We can get over 100,000 downloads on this app
Easily. I'm with you, brother.
They'll build it for free.
I know. We've offered this before. What, you think the Levolution didn't have enough computer geeks? Okay? Not the point. Let me ask the question. That's not the point. Their point is control. You know, they're still a political party. They want control. They don't want free. They don't want spontaneous order. They don't want autonomy. They don't want you'll have a standard by which you'll excommunicate candidates or what? No. The core of the national chair, in my opinion, was, you know, all the things that you're doing, that's cool, but is to define libertarianism, defend the meaning of the word, to defend the platform, or at least a freaking statement of principle. I mean, you know, to defend what it is to be libertarian, instead of taking that and kind of, you know, offering it up in negotiation of who I can work with, we can change kind of little, you know, let the candidates do whatever, let the states do whatever they, but what it is to be libertarian must be defended by somebody. Are you going to do that? And if you are, what is it that you're going to be defending? You see my point? How you do it and the technology to do it, I don't really care. You know, that's going to happen spontaneously. It happened. The libertarian movement is much bigger outside the Libertarian Party already anyway, you know. But the thing is,
absolutely. And, I mean, when you say that, that's actually one thing I want to address. Because if you look at it, there's Students for Liberty, Young Americans for Liberty, there's the Mises Institute, Cato, and all of these other groups that are very libertarian. And they don't even really like to recognize the Libertarian Party exists. So that's one thing that just needs an early change.
Why?
Right there.
Why? Why don't they want to? Why?
Because we lose, and we lose badly, and also we have a bunch of insight, which kind of just makes us look almost pathetic. I mean, when I was involved in the New York Party, and I was going to some of these meetings, there was this guy who, first off, he was trying to found his own little whack job political party, and I was like, probably 16 years old when I was involved in this. And I'll be honest, I'll say the guy's name. It was this guy named Tom Stevens, who called himself Doctor. And he wasn't actually a doctor, but he was the former chairman of the Pennsylvania Party, even though he never lived in Pennsylvania. And he's the current chairman of the Queens Libertarian Party. And I'm looking at it like, this guy is a total whack job. He keeps poking me on Facebook, besides the fact he weighs 300 pounds and is almost 60 years old. And then also, he seems to be contacting a bunch of other people around my age. And we're like, what the hell is going on here? And, I mean, I remove the guy, I block him on Facebook, I say, look, don't talk to me again or I'm out of here. But, I mean, then I talk to other people in the LP, like, years later, and this guy is pretty much a well-known, like, freak.
All right.
And I'm just like, why
understanding
are you
your credit score.
All right, yeah, we're in break. Can you hear? Can you hear the music?
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear the music there.
Okay, music starts 30 seconds. Okay, welcome to the Libertarian Party.
I've seen this is like 5 years of welcoming.
Okay, I don't want to. I mean, it's your show. I mean, I want to do, but it's a good opportunity. I mean, once I talk to you, then we got to talk to the other guys. But
I'll talk to the other guys.
We had McAfee on and Johnson on, you know, for years. And I've been doing radio since 03. You know, I mean, this is, you know, the boys. And Austin and Daryl Perry. Ah, Daryl Perry. Yeah, yeehaw, man. Freaking, I vote none. You're an anarchist compared to what? I mean, you know, I got to deal with this crap. So, you know, so my thing is it's philosophy. It was never, okay. When you say we always lose, that has always been upsetting to me. I'm going, lose what? Did Ron Paul lose? You know, I'm going, no. It was an entire worldwide generational shift in freaking just opinion. So we use this whole thing just to change public opinion. Without the public's opinion going your way, doesn't matter what you do, trick, skate in, kind of don't mean shit. You know, it has to be, public opinion has to be on your side of whatever the heck it is. So advocating for leave me aloneism is freaking awesome. Voluntarism, libertarian, anarchist, whatever, I just call it leave me aloneism, man. I don't care. But so the thing is that as we're doing this and you're running your race and it's just going to be experience that you're going to get, and hopefully the influence that you have, whether you win or not, that the influence that you've had on the things that be done, you're not the first one to be making this case.
But I'm not the first.
You're up,
and not the last, hopefully.
No. But you're up against La Machine. And the machine of a national, any party has ballot status, has tentacles from they, them, those at the highest level of freaking what they will and will not allow and how and the influence of and the delegation of this guy. I give you Bob Barr, okay? And so this is libertarian, the movement, and certainly the party in and of itself, it was always considered a liberty nexus for us. It was where you went to kind of meet the real activist. But with the online, because I went before, heck, when we were, oh my God, email, this thing's awesome, you know. What happens is now as technology has gotten to the point where people can align and express themselves in other ways. Hell, we got Walter Block, you know, libertarians for Trump. I mean, gag me, forklift.
But, I interviewed him on that, by the way. Interesting views.
Whatever. You know, we had Roger Stone on that. He's a libertarian helping Trump. You know, he's anti-Bush and Clinton family in the books of the kind of whatever. And we're like, cool. What you are benefiting from is decades of a foundational screaming, trying to keep the libertarian philosophy at least pure in its definition, whatever people do is a whole nother thing. What happens is that finally has gotten to the point to where with the internet and communication, it doesn't really matter what the party does anymore. And that's what
you're not wrong. I mean, the Libertarian Party, I like to say it's a nickel to the actual dollar of the liberty movement. Now, regarding what you were saying about like puritanism and how we go about this, I mean, look, I'm pure to the platform. I want to advocate the platform. And also, I understand what you're saying. By losing, it's not about winning the election per se. It's about really getting a movement. The fact is, we're not even getting a movement.
No. Say a movement. I understand, because they're trying to get 2% more of votes they think by compromising, being scumbags. It doesn't work that way. You know,
we're coming back.
You can tell me all about it. Here we go.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
See the Libertarian Party website and the infrastructure of how, you know, how come there's no place for, heck, we got a new logo, and we spent a gazillion dollars and a bunch of time, we got a new logo, where it should be 575 billion zillion different versions of people just all over and can't got logo and pick one. I mean, just do what the heck you want. This is your freedom's the answer. What's that question. Okay? So I go to Charles. I'm like, all right, man, you're going to get us all technologically, you know, savvied up and then the app of kind of whatever in support of what? I mean, to do what? What is it we're going to use the Libertarian Party, national chair of Charles Parolo? He's up there, you know, kind of, and we're going to expect what by the next election cycle? What? Help me out, man. Do it.
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple issues. If you want to talk about the actual issues, I think the Libertarian needs to advocate. The Libertarian Party needs to advocate. I mean, I would say really that the issues where the Republicans and Democrats are especially weak on. So one issue I think we really need to talk about is immigration. I'm a very big advocate for open borders. I'm a big advocate for amnesty. And I think that our current immigration laws are kind of inhumane. We have 20 million people here who I think live as second-class citizens due to the immigration laws in place. And I think that that is a major problem.
Okay, why?
And also, why is it a major problem?
Yeah, see, you're going to be advocating people, in the era of Trump and all this stuff. I need to know the philosophical reason.
Because these are people we have no issue putting McDonald's and Maze uniforms on, but yet when they want to go and buy insurance, like they make money and they want to go buy something like insurance, they want to buy a home, they can't. The fact is, they work very hard, and we treat them like they're just a second-class citizen. So immigration is a huge issue. The next thing
time out, man. You can't just whiz by, especially a big issue like that. It's Arizona, it's Trump, it's all this kind of...
You're in Arizona, so I wanted to bring that one up.
You know, America and all that kind of... No, I'm with you. You know, we did the SB 1070. I went, you know, head up against Russell Pierce on that, and they were part of the recall election that he got unelected as president of the Senate, and first time in Arizona history somebody got recalled, and he was president of the Senate, and he does a letter when I go to Liberty Forum to speak that day. He says, Ernie's a domestic terrorist. He stopped the vote on the blah, 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 blah. I get it, okay? The point is that why? I'm going, why?
Now, well, I think our immigration laws, the reason is it's humane. It's the society we treat with respect. The fact is, we talk about the freedom of information that's spreading through country to country. We all love free trade. Well, most of us love free trade, and we love buying stuff overseas. The fact is, when labor comes here, we're the first people to complain, but at the same time, we complain about labor, and yet we use it all the time. In fact, we use it so frequently. And if you look at the people who are the biggest advocates against immigration, they come from states such as Michigan, North Dakota, Ohio, states where there are relatively no immigrants. I mean, if you go to Texas, I mean, there's probably the highest percentage of Republicans there for more open borders. In fact, Ted Cruz, who in 2012, he won saying he was going to increase the number of visas like 500%. And Ted Cruz won in a landslide in Texas, and he won the Republican primary there. So, and his opponent was anti-immigration.
Now, see, all the things that you're saying is percentages and votes and because, and we should, and we use it anyway. But I need to understand your core principle behind
it. My core principle behind it is just at the end of the day, I think it is humane to have immigration. I think that's an important issue.
Okay,
there.
So now they're going to bring up that Europe and the flood of the immigrants, you know, and oh my God, the welfare warfare states of fill in the blank country in Europe.
It's called don't have a massive welfare state.
Ah,
I mean,
okay.
Here's the thing. If I were to say like what the libertarian position should be, I would say that, you know, we can have open borders, but at the same time, let's make a very simple law saying no immigrant can ever receive welfare. That's a really simple compromise right there. And it's one of those compromises where nobody wants to deal with it. Now, when it comes to other Libertarian Party issues besides just immigration, I mean, I would say that another big thing is if the Libertarian Party can't win an election, I think a great thing they should do is at least spread knowledge, at least make it so that 10% or 20% of the population actually knows basic economics. Because if you look at it, there is the Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders generation, which, I mean, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, they both advocate this massive protectionist trade policy. And guess what? Milton Friedman, Murray Rothbard, or even Paul Krugman, all of those guys are for free trade. There is no major economist there who advocates 20% tariffs. Yet Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are rallying their groups of people who want the Smoot-Hawley generation type thing, and they're doing this. I mean, Bernie Sanders, when it comes to his policy, it's disgusting what Bernie is doing with economics. So I would say we have to spread knowledge on economics. I think that's important, along with immigration. And obviously another issue, which I don't think either of the two parties are talking about, is being anti-war. Walter Block tried to make the claim Trump is the anti-war candidate, which I think Trump is just he has no idea what he's doing on foreign policy candidate. And Bernie Sanders, you know, he might be a bit better than Hillary Clinton on foreign policy. I think we can all give him that. But, you know, he's not really talking about it. So I would like, you know, here's the thing. If you go to the Ron Paul movement, which you've mentioned and you were involved in, if you go to the Ron Paul movement, one of the big issues, the reason they were so popular is they were the only candidate, I think, in the last 20 years to say, we're going to remove all the 700 bases. Yeah. I mean, that should be a major stepping stone for the Libertarian Party. Now, if you're going to ask me what is the underlying philosophy to all of this, I think at the end of the day, it's that people produce things, people have their property, and people have themselves. They own it, and nobody can tell them what to do with it as long as they're not telling other people to do with it. That's the underlying philosophy of the Libertarian Party, and I think most people in the party understand that. I mean, you get a couple of Wayne Allen Roots, you get a couple of people who clearly are just in this as like some sort of cheap power grab. But overall, I would say that the vast majority of the party philosophically is correct. It's other things. It's the websites. It's how to deal with people who don't always agree with them 100% of the time. That's the problem. They're not unified. They're not organized. And that's something I'm trying to bring to the table. But when it comes to philosophy, I think the party has it right. I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is they just don't know what they're doing. Now, you've mentioned there's kind of this establishment to the Libertarian Party. I mean, I don't know if it's so much the establishment. I think that when it comes to this role, this is not an easy job, the chairman's spot. It's one that definitely is a thankless job, and it is more hours and not really any pay. So I can definitely see why there's some failures there. And I think that that is a problem. But I don't blame, I don't think there's any, like, problem in the party where, I think it's just lack of efforts, too many screen matches, and them not being able to deal with it. And look, I was involved with Bitcoin. I was involved with Invention. I live for screen matches, and I can handle that. So that's something I'm looking for.
Screen matches? What are you talking about?
A scream of matches. Basically, like, I mean, I've heard some horror stories in the LP where, in fact, it's Judd Weiss who was telling me about it, because Judd Weiss was involved in the LA Libertarian Party. He was telling me how he would get every week about 100 emails from just infighting between people in these parties. And I think
Scream matches.
Scream matches, not scream. That would be a little weird. Scream.
Flame wars.
Yeah, flame wars. And I don't want to get involved in that. I mean, I want to ignore those types of issues and focus on the bigger picture here. But I think that that's part of the reason some people in this party are so bitter. I was talking to R. Lee Wright, who ran against Gary Johnson in 2012, and I was asking him his thoughts because he's been involved in this party for many years.
Yeah, I know.
And I almost detected a bit of a bitterness from him, to be quite honest. I don't think when I mentioned trying to like make coalitions in the Democrat and Republican Party to try and like keep their more libertarian members, he was very opposed. And I looked at that and said, we need to work something out. We need to work something out here. And he was just very, very vocal on this. And he said,
we're all about working with, as long as we get to stay libertarian. You know, this is last election cycle, the Democrats spent $500,000 on making sure a referendum went up that stopped them from eliminating libertarians. We were with that.
Yeah, when it comes to these people,
okay, we're
like,
in break.
Okay, I know. I heard the music at that time. I'm assuming we're break.
Okay, now let me go ahead and one thing I wanted to mention while you're, I didn't want to say it on the live. The immigration issue is always a big deal. Yeah, well, we need, even Pat Buchanan running in 96 made this point, is that we need, because I've had a bunch of lawsuits. I've argued before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, 44 election laws, Arizona, kind of doing, I've been butthead for a long time. Okay, ran for Congress 3 times, U.S. Senate, Secretary of State 2x, legislature, kind of record. I've been there, done that. Okay, the point is that I always maintained a hardcore blah, 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 because it's so much more timeless. And the reason is Buchanan made the same point that you did. Why are we giving welfare to illegal immigrants? And while a lot of people don't know, that went back to the 14th Amendment and Supreme Court of Yickwo versus Hopkins, blah, blah, blah. And I'll tell you the story real quick and you'll understand. There was a Chinese coolie immigrant, emperor Japan, take one of our peasants and go build railroads or whatever. He's in San Francisco, and he does a Chinese, ancient Chinese secret laundry, okay? Well, the Caucasians there, businessmen in San Francisco, passed a law saying that if you were Chinese and, you know, not a citizen, all this other stuff, you couldn't operate a laundry at night. So they just wanted to monopoly, you know, eliminate competition. Well, he didn't get the memo or didn't care, and he kept doing it. They arrest him. It goes to the Supreme Court, and they used the 14th Amendment, and they said equal protection clause. You can't give special rights that don't equally apply to everybody, but they never mention citizenship. This is all about human beings in America get treated the same under the law, period. That is why Constitution, because it doesn't recognize citizenship. It's just human beings. So the thing is, it's not welfare for or not for immigrants. The solution is no welfare.
Well, I mean, actually, there is a law currently in place where you have to wait 5 years to be a citizen to get welfare. Now, there's a couple of strings where some people break that. Now, when it comes to welfare overall with illegal immigrants, I've looked at the numbers on this. We spend $25 billion a year on border security. Then we spend about $20 to $30 billion on top of that with enforcement, so the legal aspect. If you look at what we spend on K through 12 welfare and Medicaid with illegal immigrants, it's about $20 billion a year. So immigration, the enforcement costs more than the actual benefits they get.
And that's exactly what they want. See, it's not about you being making more. It's about who gets it. When we go to Iraq and we spend $130 a barrel over the cost of the oil to defend for cheap oil, you go, well, that's stupid. Why the hell we have these wars? Because it's who gets the money. It's how they get the money. They don't give a crap about saving the money.
Well, the thing is, they don't care about saving money. Also, there are a lot of lobbies that, I mean, there are a lot of people who just want money to defend the border. I mean, honestly, we talk about this wall with Donald Trump. I mean, there will be companies to make billions of dollars off of that if it ever happened. It won't happen, luckily, but there would be people who want it like that. Now, when it comes to the financial aspect of immigration, I mean, I've just looked at the numbers, and very visibly, illegal immigrants, when it comes to the federal or even local budget, they're not really a negative at all. I think what's more of a negative.
They don't
is
care.
Them-
See, this is stuff that, you know, the pop. They don't. It's all what's imagined. You have to get a principle.
It's all what's imagined. I mean, the thing is, the reality is, people like to create a vice for why they're not happy. And if you look at immigration, and it's always the immigrants they give the issues to. They try to give it to the Irish. They try and give it to.
I'm hip, brother.
Jews.
All right, we're coming back. Here we go.
All right, come on.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Yeah, we're having a conversation, getting to, you know and share with and talk about libertarian things with Charles Perallo. He's running for national chair. He's 21 years old. And been around, though. I mean, the boy's got skills. You know, he gets, he wants to do, and we can just fix and do an app, and why are you guys not good? I give you all the 15 gazillion reasons why. You know, because they're a political party. And, you know, they spent years and years trying to get, no, we're not just an education. We're not, no, we got to win. We want to, and to win, we need to kind of soften the Bob Barr. And I go, yeah, how'd that work out? You know, right when the philosophy was needed more than anything, 6 months later, Ron Paul and everybody just, you know, blazed away from and who's the Libertarian Party. Then we get, you know, Barr and Johnson and kind of I got a little tax. It's a flat tax. It's better tax. You know, kind of this is the principles are gone. And if you don't advocate for these principles, then why do I care? I can do it better outside. You know, hell, I'll do it better with the newspaper I put in all the convention bags. Well, this is what's happening internationally. Here's authors from Europe and Africa and Latin America. We're just in Asia. I mean, boom, shakalaka. This is so much bigger than this. But you have a 21-year-old comes in and says, hey, man, well, if that's happening, we can have like a better web presence, more apps. You can get it going on. What is the problem? If we're not advocating libertarian philosophy, all the other stuff is just it's a waste of time. Somebody else will do it because freedom is the answer. What's the question? So, Charles, in this last segment, I want to give it to you and let you kind of the people in convention that haven't known about you, that, you know, are just now starting, hey, he's on the list, oh, let's see what's up. These delegates, they come in and they already got their minds made up, or somebody told them what to vote, or their state chairs kind of, they go to, you know, the people and been, you know, marketing to them. Have you been marketing to the delegates? And right now, what would you say to them? The biggest reason that libertarianism would be thwarted by having you as LNC chair would be what?
Well, we've been doing a lot of marketing with delegates. I mean, we've been forming groups online, trying to go state by state. I've had a couple of people on my team help me out with it. One thing is that with a lot of these delegates, not a lot of them know this race is even happening. So that is the advantage there. I would say 2/3 of them are there to vote for the president. Only 1/3 actually really know anything about the chairman race. It seems like a lot of people that I speak to, they do want, like a lot of them who have been in the party, they seem to like Nick Sarwak. And I ask them, why would you vote for him again? And the reason they give is, well, I like him personally. And I'm like, anything about his particular ability as chairman? And their reaction is more of, yeah, I think he's done it. He hasn't set the party on fire, to my knowledge. So it doesn't seem like people are really that satisfied there. And I think we've been getting a good reaction from the delegates. Nobody seems to be bashing the platform that we've set out at all. But I want to get into a point you just mentioned regarding Bob Barr. I mean, if you look at Bob Barr, you look at Rand Paul, when it comes to compromise and liberties to try and grow the movement, it doesn't seem to really work that well.
Ever.
I mean, if you actually look at this race, because I just want to bring up Rand Paul, because Rand Paul was someone who I donated money to, I supported, and his campaign was a complete and utter disaster. It was, by every metric, a failure. I mean, his father at age 77, who his father was just a congressman, his father's a little weird looking, his father's old, he was able to beat his senator son, who's in his early 50s, massively. And if you look at why that is, I think that on foreign policy, Donald Trump was talking kind of, he was making, I mean, I don't know if Donald Trump knows foreign policy. I don't think he does as well as Rand Paul, but he was saying things that libertarians like on foreign policy. He was talking non-intervention. If you go to economic policy, Ted Cruz, that was probably more fiscally conservative than Rand Paul. I mean, I heard Ted Cruz say he wants to abolish Medicare. Rand Paul kind of shied away from that. And on social issues, I mean, Rand Paul devoted 2 months of his campaign to talk about Planned Parenthood. So when it comes to philosophy, I think what we have to do very clearly is, as a party, if you go to like groups such as NRA or Planned Parenthood, they give every politician ratings. I think we have to do a very similar metric to that, where we have to show, well, I think we should ask, not demand, but ask every person who runs for any office in our party to take a test, a very detailed, like 30-minute thing, just showing where they stand. It's not going to judge them. It's not going to bar them from running, but it'll just show people, and it'll be public info where they stand on the issue.
Have you seen that poll online? It says isidewith.com.
Oh, yeah, of course I've seen
it. It's awesome. I got it pulled up right now. I go, wow, I was at 98%. Daryl Perry.
Well, I was actually a little shocked that Daryl was, I mean, the funniest thing is I've shared rooms with Daryl at events. I know Daryl well. He was in the debate I moderated in Philadelphia. I had Daryl at 94%. Gary John, I mean, this might just say, like, anyone in the audience, like, where I stand on these things. I had Daryl at 94%. I had Gary Johnson at 92%. Let's see, Mark Feldman at 91, John McAfee at 90, and Austin Peterson at 88%. So, and then way down, Ted Cruz is 68%. So I'm pretty up there with the libertarianism. I think with iSideWith, I don't think I would use that quiz in particular. I think we have to do something a little bit more in detail, a little less commercial. But I think we have to really score these candidates. And I think the reason is because if you were to do a score, if you were to have an official score, like where they stand on the libertarian issues, Bob Barr and Wayne Allen probably never would have got nominated, because if you looked at their views and looked at their records, they were not libertarian.
That's not why they were pushed by the core group inside of Do It's because they had ego. They needed a congressman to be able to spell the word libertarian. Somehow that was going to equate to a bunch of money that they get to divvy up amongst themselves running
I think, when it came to the party, the fact is that they were just lied to. I mean, way down the route, I mean, I don't want to sound offensive. I don't want to accuse the guy of fraud, but I did some research on him because I was friends with him on Facebook for a while. I spoke to him, and I always thought he was a very suspicious type of person. So I just look up, like, what are these businesses this guy claims to own? And I couldn't find anything besides, like, Wayne Allen Root speaking, Wayne Allen Root, like, dead end. And I looked at, like, his commercial gambling company, which, if you ask me, is kind of a scam. I mean, he claims to have 100 employees. One of his old employees said that Wayne never had over 30 employees, even though he publicly said he had over 100. Then he said he invests in all the things he promotes, which he doesn't. So I think this is a very fraudulent character. And he's right now, if you go on his website, he's selling this cheap book, How to Get Rich in Business, but all it does is talk about
conservatism. You know, I ran against him. I know. I get it. You know, the thing
I think the Libertarian Party got lied to. I mean, we were hostile.
They willingly get lied. For $10,000, they lie to me all you want and here, you know, do me. I mean, I get it. So as a 21-year-old person
I have $10,000. Does that mean I get to be chairman of the authority if I put it in the 10 grand?
You put it in the right place, absolutely.
$10,000. I mean, we talk $10,000 to become a chairman of the third largest party in America. That's not the best description. I got to work on that.
No. I'm telling you, it's, you know, if you got the right people doing the right, it's a political party. It's, you know, yeah. And it may have gone up. It may be $25,000 now, but I mean, you know, the point is that. You're 21 from out of the blue coming in running for national chair. Where else does that happen? And you're right. I don't care about the age thing. The age thing, that means nothing to me. It's the philosophy and maybe some experience. And this effort now, you will get some experience.
Well, when it comes to the experience aspect, I'd like to just clarify. I mean, here's the thing. When it comes to a lot of people in the tech industry, like when I was at the Bitcoin Center, we manage budgets bigger than what the Libertarian Party national budget is. So I'm experienced there. When it comes to social media, which I think is the most important way for us to get through, with beinglibertarian.com, we have about 50,000 likes on Facebook. We actually get in interactions every week about 2 million. So that's on par with what the Libertarian page at 700,000 is. So I'm experienced there, and I know how to build up social media. And what I want to do with social media is set up 6 through 12 single-issue pages. So let's say, end the war on drugs, end the wars, free the markets, amnesty. We do all of that. We grow that to 500,000 members with wide networks, and we start spreading that around. But that's another detail. So I'm experienced on that. So I think when it comes to the core experiences of technology, budget management, getting out there, I know all of that stuff. And I think I've studied that well. And if you look at the people I'm running against, I mean, one person I think was Mark Rutherford. He said he's been involved in the party for 25 years.
Yeah.
I look at this and he said, okay, you've been involved in the party in 25 years.
Yeah,
what
you done?
What have you accomplished? I mean, you know, 25 times zero is zero.
Yep. Well, this is one thing, Charles, at the end of this, I want to remind everybody, and this is exactly why I say this. If you are high up the ladder and you, man, look how far we are. I've done this, done. But if the ladder's on the wrong wall, what difference does it make? We want to make sure that we got it on the right wall. We want to scale the right wall. Scaling the wrong wall doesn't mean anything, you know? I look how high I'm up on the communist of the kind of, you know, who cares, you know? Is it libertarian? Are we taking that mountain? Well, Charles is trying.
Why
go check him out.
Why did you move to the Shire?
There you go. Okay. See, this is the one thing I'm really glad. I am glad you're there, and I'm glad you bring in this. It's going to be an issue, and I'm hoping they'd embrace it. But we brought this in 8 and 10 to the party with demonstration of, oh, my God, it works when you have the people involved in just in graphics, artwork. How come they're not doing all the stuff they did for Dr. Paul for the Libertarian candidate? Why? Because they weren't really Libertarian. So this libertarian, no compromise of freedom kind of man, it is rampant, and it's all outside the party. You bring it in, and they want to, you can't do that, and you're violation of kind of, you're not allowed. And then if you're very successful, they even sue you, they come after you, they try to replace you, whatever, because it's about control. It's not about freedom, it's just in the name of freedom. It's awesome. We get in the budget and the millions of how much I cut of the mailing house of I get to do the program of the guy that did the webpage kind of crap. This stuff has been happening for decades, okay? So when you come in, you go, what the hell is wrong? I'll tell you what's wrong. It's all about people there that want to maintain their control. To free people? No, they don't give a crap. They just want to have their shiny badge. That's why they...
Oh, no. I mean, there's people in this party that I think it is just the entire thing is a power advantage. I mentioned with that weirdo Tom Stevens. I mean, this guy's not even a libertarian.
It doesn't matter. You can't come up with 15 gazillion names of we know. We get it. There's 5 billion of these guys. And it shouldn't even matter. It's not even, don't waste the time. I want to make sure that as you go through this to serve my purposes, it's all about my prayer. Libertarian is all about me. Okay. Now, but fortunately, I see in serving other people's me, and being a resource for them, we all benefit. And that Liberty Nexus that the Libertarian Party can be, and what you're talking about building and making it a tool for, is what we did with Freedom's Phoenix. Freedom's Phoenix, we have, you know, the radio and the television and the funding center and the marketplace and the apps and, you know, all that stuff was things that exactly as Chad, go look. There's enormous how we're doing it already. What the hell are you guys doing? So it doesn't matter. But
it's the thing is, I mean, you mentioned the Ron Paul movement. I'm like, you know, you guys got in with technology. You guys got in with social media. You guys let everyone organize. Yep. And you know what? You guys did really well. I mean, you were in 2012.
No, there was no you guys. It was just individuals. That's my point.
I'm just classing in the whole wrong.
No, I understand, but it was a philosophy of spontaneous order behind it. If you're going into the Libertarian Party with anything other than the freeing of the libertarians and to use resources that you'll probably be really great at making available to them, but not under the conditions that they use it a certain way or whatever, you just define libertarianism. This is it. Well, they're doing. Yeah, well, that's them. What do I care? You know, we're a resource for people to go be free stuff. You know, it's enormous. I'm really excited that you're there and at this experience and at this age and that you see that you're going to do it. That's why I'm spending this extra time with you and kind of sharing a little bit. I could spend.
Oh, no, I like hearing the time. I like to talk to anybody who's been involved in the party.
I can give you hours and hours and hours of hours of we were always on the outside in Arizona, the libertarian state, saith the media of whatever, and they, you know, constantly on our ass because we weren't under control. We didn't join the unified membership program of where you send money to the national and then they divvy it back to the states. I'm like, what the hell? Are you guys drinking Potomac water or something? Where does this mentality come from? You know? So this is, I got lots of stories, but it all came down to advocating of the libertarian, non-aggression, leave me aloneist philosophy and let freedom is a, libertarianism is a method, not a goal. It's this non-aggression. You get to do whatever as long as you're not bothering anybody. Well, that is a method. It's not a goal. Freedom, how they use that freedom is an individual decision, and everybody wants to make it a collective decision. Well, the libertarian view of freedom is, you know, who gives a crap what your view? It's mine. It's my individual pursuit of happiness. My life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Leave me alone. You want to give me some tools to do however I want to do that? Peace out. But everybody wants to collect. Our collective beats your collective against collectivism. And I'm going, where the hell did the Libertarian Party do this collective thing all the time? So I don't think collectively. It's just a service to the individual. And you got hundreds of thousands of people going out whipping ass, and you can provide them with that, but without, you know, violating the principle. You can do that. You got a freaking army.
Oh, no, and I agree. I mean, that's why. I mean, here's the thing. What I always say, the lucky thing about the Libertarian movement is the Libertarian Party doesn't control it. I mean, the fact is, the Libertarian Party, I would say, is it's sort of sad for the party, but it's not sad for the Liberty Movement as a whole. We're one of the smaller groups, if you really think about it. Our budgets are not that big. Groups like the Cato Institute have way more money than we do, and same with the Ayn Rand Institute. And I look at it and say, you know, those groups, I would say they're better organized, but at the same time, they're a little bit more decentralized than us. Like, if you look at the Libertarian Party, we have kind of a few rules, and we don't really allow people to spread themselves out much. If you look at the social media, we don't really support them. Like, the local parties are like, they're like 200 likes when they should be, I don't know, they should be like, I don't know, 10,000, I think, to be healthier. That would recommend, that would present the idea of more growth.
The Ron Paul thing, how many hundreds of millions of dollars? God, hell, they raised $40 million. You know, not even counting, hell, $6 million in a day. You know, not even counting what everybody else did on their own. You know, this is, that is just sitting there, ready to be, like if McAfee had come in.
By the way, and speaking of Arlie Wright, when I mentioned my goal to, like, make some coalition for the Libertarian Republicans, he was freaking out when I said that. He said, I call BS, the Ron Paul movement didn't help the Libertarian movement at all. And I'm like, are you kidding me, man? Hey, look, they got.
I'm with you. Yeah, we try. I know Lee well. You know, Lee and I are good friends, and I understand. Went through the.
I mean, there's a reason Ted Cruz and Donald Trump are saying end the Fed. It's because of Ron Paul. I mean, I don't think either of them believe it.
Bitcoin,
but
ignore
it.
The Fed. I don't care about ending them. Ignore them. Screw them. Don't care.
but if you look at it, I mean. Ted Cruz, I mean, he stole all of Ron Paul's platforms. I mean, I don't know. I don't think he's that genuine. I think Ted Cruz is kind of a dishonest guy. But
hey, Charles, I want to do this. I'd love talking to you. I got to get to my next guest. You know, I only got like a minute and a half here. But keep doing what you're doing. I'll pay more attention, and I'll try and get the other guys on, and we'll, you know, have the series of we talk to them and whatever. But maybe we'll get you on again before the convention. Keep doing what you're doing, man. Peace, brother. You know, right on.
Nice speaking to you, Ernest. I'll talk to you later.
All right, man. Bye.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Here on Declare Your Independence. I'm here in the Sandcock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. All right, we're saving the whales today. Yeah, you knew eventually it was going to happen. We'll save some whales. I think they're going to be interested in our position, you know, as an anarchist, libertarian, freedom-oriented, leave-me-aloneist. You know, what would they have to say about the whales? Well, we're going to find out what they have to say. Maris Siddenstecker, the second, M2. M1 was her mom, okay? Maris Siddenstecker, you know, has been, was co-founder of Save the Whales, and I think we're talking to M2. Are we talking to M2? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you were involved at a young age of 14. You started getting involved in, you know, this program after you learned what happened. You wanted to have a say. And how we got, you came to our attention is there was a young girl, Dee McMillan. She's not going to be able with us today, but she raised money for endangered whales after being called a fat whale, and she turned that angst into, you know, a positive thing, and that's kind of cool. Let's go ahead, and before we get into your 501c3 and all your efforts and everything, let's give her a shout-out to Dee and what she did and the positive things that she's turned that into.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Dee is only 16 years old, and she took a very negative bullying situation at her school and made it into something very, very positive. And now she's gotten worldwide attention and has a lot of support. And she's just a remarkable young lady. And I think her story is inspirational for a lot of other teens who possibly might be going through something negative in their own school.
Well, that's good. Good for her, and I'm glad that, you know, we'll give, you know, just some props to Dee for turning something into a positive thing. But, you know, a lot of people, they're like, it's always kind of been a, you know, throwaway, save the whale people. Who cares about whales? I have a whale, and I love whale. It tastes good. I mean, you know, it's kind of, we need more lamps and whatever, and kind of, you know. So it was, you had to go up against that, why we should care. And there's two things. One, just the respect of life. I mean, you know, kind of, you know, in general, that. Then you get in, well, okay, maybe it might be okay to swat a mosquito, but, you know, eating bonobo chimp brains is probably not a good idea, and we like dolphins and flipper. So I'm just wondering, why? What's the line? Is it just whales? Are you down to chickens? Are you vegan? I mean, you know, what is the philosophy that you're operating from?
So the philosophy of our organization is education and outreach into schools in order to inspire them about the oceans and what lives in it, and that there's simple actions we can do every day to protect it. For example, a very simple thing, such as littering, actually has really dire consequences, even for whales. And recently, recently there's actually been videos of whales washing up on beaches dead, and after they do the necropsies, they're finding that they're completely filled with plastic and garbage and litter, which is blocking the opening of their stomach. So I'm saying, and our philosophy is that we need to respect, you know, our oceans, which actually are the main lungs of our entire planet and are keeping our entire planet going. If we pollute the oceans so badly that we're killing off, you know, the largest mammals in the world, the largest animals, which is the blue whale, which gets to be 100 feet and lives in the ocean, then we're really experimenting with our own demise.
No, I'm hip with that. You know, so really, from your perspective, it's an ocean thing, and the whale is the poster child.
The whale is the icon.
Yeah, that, poster child. Yeah.
Yes. No, right. People, I mean, we talk about all ocean animals when we're talking about the oceans, but children are really interested in whales. It's kind of like dinosaurs. And so we have marine biologists that go into the schools in our area with whale bones and artifacts. We're like a mini museum. And hands-on education is a way that really inspires children. They never forget, you know, having touched big whale bones or looking at all the different things we've got.
You know, this is, I want to drill in before the end of this segment, you know, on the sentience part, the intelligence, the whales themselves, the cetaceans. I mean, I'm kind of, and where the line would be, that's really not what your focus is. You're more focused on the whales as an example, and we're destroying their habitat, and if you love whales, you should not pollute the ocean, duh. So I'm going, so they're kind of the hook, you know, for the kids to understand that, look how great and beautiful and intelligent these creatures are, and we're destroying their environment. Stop destroying their environment.
Right. And by destroying their environment, we're also destroying our environment. So, you know, we as humans or anything, we can't survive without the oceans.
You know, this is a philosophical, you know, freedom-oriented, leave-me-alone-ist kind of thing, but I tell you why, and I got time. All right, bear with me. I'm going to tell you why I wanted to have you on, okay?
Okay.
So you can understand. In libertarian, non-aggression principle, leave-me-alone kind of philosophy, a lot of it has to do with against monopolies and government-supported corporation personhood of their insulated from wrongdoing kind of mess up, you know, my air, my water, my crap, and there's really nothing you can do about, and the philosophy behind that is what? So our thing is that, you know, first, do no harm. You know, does that apply to the animal kingdom? You know, we got Auschwitz of the cattle shoot pig, chicken kind of thing. But
right.
we're worried about the ocean. Why? You know, well, it's because it affects human beings. Do we have any empathy for other animals? I mean, we're omnivores. We can kind of, pick and choose the water, and then with the freedom to trade and around the world, there's a lot of variety in foods that we can have. We don't have to do meat. But is that really?
Absolutely.
But is that really the point? My thing is that there is a discussion that's going on inside libertarian circles now. That is, does the non-aggression principle? Can we apply that to other animals? You know, and I'm going, okay, if it would, where would you start and where would you end? Well, I don't know. chimpanzees are pretty smart. I mean, we just, you know, butcher them and use them because we like chimp bicep for dinner or something. I mean, you know, the whales are still a delicacy in a lot of parts. You know, like Japanese, man, bring on the porpoises and the whales. So I'm going, this is a philosophical, what role do we play in this? And it's not just the ocean. It's the intelligence of animals that we yet to understand if they can think. You know, are we being a good... Does our philosophy only apply to humans? And if we expand that, where's the line and why? You know, I mean, do we have animal rights? Do the whales have to have somebody speak for them? Or are they just a poster child for the ocean and we're doing it for us? Well, it might be a good hook, but maybe we'll talk about, you know, our relationship with other animals as fellow animals. This is a debate. We'll talk about it.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
There you go. Oh, sorry. I didn't have the mic on. There you go. Hi, this is Donna. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay,
can
great.
You hear me?
Yes. So we have you for about 15 minutes or so, 15, 20 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, great.
One
All right.
segment.
All right, yeah, we have you on for one segment. I'm going to put you on hold and Ernest will pick you up.
Okay.
Hello, D.
Hi.
Okay, let's get you kind of hot. Go ahead and count to five for me, will you?
One, two, three, four, five.
All right, there we go. We did. Maris is on the line. Maris, say hello.
Yeah. Hi, Dee.
Hi, Maris.
Okay, what we're going to go ahead and do, when we come back, we didn't know that we were going to be able to get you. We'll get you a segment, and we'll just give it to you and let you, you know, tell your story and what's up. Main thing that, you know, we're talking about, you know, a lot of things, you know, but your issues brought a lot of attention to this, you know, good on you. So we'll go ahead and just let you tell your story real quick, skip to the end of how you turn positive in, you know, out of a negative. But I'm just very interested also in, you know, how did you become introduced to the whale movement? Were you already that, or was the bullying, you know, something that prompted that, or you just saw a way to do? I mean, it's interesting in a young mind how that would happen, or was it somebody that helped you with it? Or did, just tell the story, and maybe we'll get into some philosophical stuff and what we should be doing. But let's go ahead and how you were used to forward this philosophy. And I would imagine you're willing. You know, you're kind of, yeah, cool. So we'll go ahead and talk about your individual circumstance. Maybe you get into some other stuff, okay?
Okay.
All right. Somebody's making noise. Stop doing whatever you're doing. What is it? Are you typing or something? Or
It is a me.
All right, Dee. Quit banging stuff, whatever it is. All right. Here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
We can get her for a little bit. She's doing whatever she's doing, but she can spend a little bit of time with us. And I wanted, you know, we gave some mad props out to Dee McMillan that she, you know, was bullied at school and kind of, yeah, fat whale or whatever the heck they did to kind of, you know, make her feel bad about herself or something, but she goes, nah, I'm good. Thanks. I'll turn that into something. Let's go ahead. Dee, tell us your story, what you did and how you've turned negative into a positive and be a hero for everybody.
Well, it started when someone made a Twitter page about me called Dee the Fat Whale.
And, no, wait. They made a Twitter page?
Yes.
Well, I mean, what'd you do? Scratch your car or something? I mean, why? Just cause?
Well, I had an issue a couple weeks before with one of the girls on my powerlifting team where we had argued about something, but come to find out it wasn't even her who made the page.
Okay, so it's just, you know, teenagers being whatever. Okay, so they did this Twitter page on you, and then your response was what?
Well, at first, like, my friend sent me a screenshot of the page while I was in class, and I went home immediately. I couldn't handle it. And after moping and crying for a couple of hours, my sister and plus size model Laura Lee both talked me into, because I had said I wanted to wear a whale shirt to school to, like, spite the people who made it, let them know they couldn't get to me. And they were like, let's do it. So we made shirts and we began selling them, and we made a GoFundMe page, and we were like, well, this money has to go somewhere. And we were like, well, let's donate it to whales because Dee the Fat Whale.
Okay. So that is that simple. You just go, yeah, you know, donate it to the whales and screw, you know, as opposed to you could just kept the money and, you know, bought yourself a, you know, a car or something. I mean, you know, whatever, you know, but you go, nah, we'll just give it to this. Just a self-esteem back at you. Kind of good for you. Good for you.
Thank you.
So this is, you know, your classmates and teachers and so on, they using you as an example of ha ha ha.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, good deal. Good deal. Well, how successful has it been? I mean, it's more than whatever money that you raised. It's the awareness that you provided. And how did Maris get involved in this?
Well, we had to find a foundation to donate the money to. And so I looked up online and I found their foundation. And I called her. And this was before I even started the money thing or any of that. I called her and I was like, hey, are you okay? Can we donate this money to you?
Yes, you can.
And she was like, yeah.
And she also asked, is it all right if we use your name and do some t-shirts? And we're like, absolutely. So
yeah, the freedom of spontaneous order of yes, you're allowed, you know. So very good. Well, that's good that you had, you know, Maris and someone. A lot of times you'll go through that and they, well, we got to have a committee meeting or a blue ribbon panel to discuss, and it's too late. Okay, so, you know, the fact that you got someone that said, Pace, rock on. What can we do to help? Now, Maris, was there any help from Save the Whales, the day, you know, .org? Did you guys retweet and promote it and tell the story?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had it on our Facebook, and it got a lot of attention that way. But it was really Dee driving all this effort. And then what we decided to do with the money is really interesting, because Save the Whales has been wanting to buy a life-size inflatable whale that we would take to inland schools where they have no connection to the oceans, and children would be able to go inside of it and see how big the heart and all the organs are.
Yeah, we're showing a picture of that up here. And yeah. So that's an inflatable way, what you did with the money to take. And that's cool, because that shows you how freaking big they are. You go,
yes.
Okay.
And the even neater thing about it is we're going to name it Dee, the beautiful whale.
Ah, score. Okay.
And then when kids go, why is the whale named Dee? We're going to go, let us tell you the story about Dee.
Okay, Dee, have they got the whale to your school yet?
No, we don't even have the whale yet. We have to special order it.
All right, cool. Well, the picture that we have up there of it, that's the you know, I guess the promotional of what it is you're getting, right?
I don't know how.
Donna has an inflatable whale in a gymnasium that's just filling it up. I'm going,
that's
okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, this is, so Dee, you know, classmates, I'm just wondering, your friends and opposite, even the bully that did it, did they take it down, or you just say, yeah, keep it going, man, we're making money on it?
The powerlifting coach, because this was before we found out that who made it was actually a boy, but because of the problem I had with one of the other girls, the powerlifting coach let the girls powerlifting team know that if he found out who did it, he was going to kick them off the team. And I think she was involved somehow, because after Coach said that, she went to the person and had them take it down.
Okay. So, yeah, it's just creative. But, you know, this stuff happens so much, and people in, you know, any school environment, but certainly in public schools, you kind of, we always critical of that. But it's just kids. It's just, you know, people being, you know, you wonder how they were brought up or why they would do something. That's just not, you know, it's not cool. But, you know, they think it's cool. And it's, why did they think it's cool? I don't know. It's the way they're brought, but you've taken this opportunity to educate people on, you know, that wasn't cool. But what they did with it was cool. They used cool. Okay, so are your classmates, are they kind of like, ah, cool?
Yeah, at the beginning, I sort of got crap from it from some people. They were like, oh, that's stupid, you know. But then as they saw it grow, they kind of jumped on board with those of us who were like, let's do this. This is cool. This is a big deal.
How
and they
old
were like,
are you?
Oh, okay.
How old are you?
I turned 17 2 weeks ago.
Oh, my God. This is at the worst time of somebody giving crap of the hormones. I'm crying, and it's and you at the worst freaking possible time that they could do something like this to self-esteem, and you turned it into, you know, a bully for you. I'm like, all right. That's very cool. What do you plan on doing in the future? Is this just, yeah, I got my thing, it's cool, or have you been inspired to take on, you know, more responsibility in this effort?
Well, I had actually thought of going into marine animal rescue before this happened, and I had given up on that and thought more about dentistry. And then now that this thing's happened, I've kind of reopened that passion, and I'm debating, you know, not knowing what to do with
it. Yeah, you know what? You're 17. It takes time. You just do right. You know, things will happen. It'll come into place for you, I'm sure. Well, your family, are they, you know, happy to have seen this happen?
Oh, yes, and they've been wonderful and really supportive.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like you got your head on your shoulders and do it. I mean, you know, it's you're involved in sports. You're involved in, you know, your powerlifting. You know, hey, man, you know, I this way I'll kick your butt and you bring it on. You know, so, well, that's good. You know, I'm wondering, you know, you were affected by this. I mean, it traumatized you at least enough. I got to go home, you know, but you turned it into a positive. It's great meeting you and spending time with you, Dee. Hold on a second. We'll talk to you a little bit more in the break. I know you got to go, but I'm really happy that you turned this into a positive thing, and I think that you've changed even the hearts of the people that were being critical of you, and that maybe you've done a lot more than just save whales and ocean. You changed the hearts and minds of people that, you know, thought it was cool. Well, it's not cool. We'll be right back. Awesome. Thanks for coming on for a little bit, Dee. I want to give you an opportunity to say, yo, what's up?
Hi.
Oh, I'm so glad you made it, Dee.
And the bell.
Okay. Yep. That's my cue to go.
All right. Thanks,
Dee. All right, Dee. Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Okay, we'll get her the... Donna has her email, I imagine, right?
I think so.
Okay, she says she doesn't have it yet, but we'll make sure we get her or send you the copies of the show, and you can forward the files to her, and she can do what she wants.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, I know we got video and... all kinds of stuff, so it'll be cool. Well, I'm glad we got that done, and you know, because I really did want to talk more about this is the position. It's something that's libertarians. There's one in particular, a good friend of mine, and he's a prominent criminal defense attorney, and he's gone more and more. I mean, he's not probably went all anal vegan, but he's really of a hardcore meat-eating, power-lifting, 300-plus bench-pressing Marine, you know, that is a well-known criminal defense attorney on TV all the time, and he's just like, man, I'm really going down. I can't really consider myself a man of peace, and then, you know, eat dead animal flesh from the Auschwitz processing plant of whatever. He's just, it's really bothering him, and he's starting to bring this up. So then, of course,
I think that's good.
In his presentation, from libertarians, man, you wouldn't expect that. But no, really, they're all very principled, and they're always susceptible to a principled argument. And the principle is basically this: libertarians embrace a philosophy called the non-aggression principle. You know, first do no harm, thou shalt not aggress against another individual in their pursuit of happiness, go whatever, peace, I don't care. Okay, I don't want to control anybody. Well, does that apply to other animals? And to what degree? And do we care? And, you know, that kind of thing. Are they just property? Well, then we can go back to slavery. Well, heck, they're just property. And then, you know, it's a, you know, women, you know, they're just property. Or what I mean, at what point do we evolve as a species and we start to include other animals? And where's the line?
And I think that's the million-dollar question.
Well, I mean, just to have the philosophical discussion is, you know, kind of, you know, it's good to have the discussion. I'm not, you know, a stake in a claim. I don't feel good. I tell you, my wife, she was like, you're not provider enough and, you know, he-man enough until you we raise turkeys and you slaughter them in our own health of whatever for Thanksgiving. Okay? So we raised about, I think it was 8 turkeys we got. Coyote got one. And then we had a bunch of people come and made a big deal out of it. By the time we get them like early August, end of July, by Thanksgiving, it's time to harvest them. They become pets. I mean, we got a bunch of chickens and aquaponics, and we have a fish pond that we grow vegetable, all kind of stuff. So we're like, yep, we're gonna do this. The eggs from the chicken, don't care. That's, you know, pretty cool. But that turkey thing, we're committed, and we're probably never gonna do that again. And, but it was a good experience for us to go through it. Did it? If I'm hungry and starving, you know, yeah, turkeys are on the menu. But until I'm just kind of this life thing. Well, now we're looking at the ocean and we're going, yeah, you know, that's kind of sustaining us too. Can we expand this philosophy to include, and if we do, what line? So I'm very interested in where you put intelligence level, or we have, you know, then like blackfish. I warned, you know, we'll talk about that on air, the orca blackfish thing. We'll be right back. Here we go.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
And we're right back. I want to get to Maris, talking about this philosophy of why do we care. Well, we're getting into a, I guess, politically correct. It's kind of, you don't want to, you know, bite off more than you can defend. But really, the whale support of whales has turned into, that's a poster child, save the whales, for the ocean, for, you know, it's kind of how it's going to benefit humanity. I mean, we take away this biosphere. I'm a scuba diver, you know, so I get it. So when I was a kid in Florida, man, I was on the reef all the time, you know, and the Keys, kind of, man, I like it. All right. So, and you can tell that, yeah, there's an impact. All right. Well, from what? And kind of, you know, it's a philosophy of, you know, can we just not be so damaging to our environment? Now, libertarian philosophy is big on, hey, you know, whoever violates my property, you know, my air, my water, do I have recourse? Yeah, let's go after them. You know, you have lawsuits, they damage me. Then what happens? Under Nixon, the U.S. government, they created the EPA. You think the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, whatever government calls something, it's the opposite, okay? So what they do is they made pollution legal. Just at a level. We decided that this level, oh, that's pollution and it cost some jobs and they have got, you know what, we just raised it. It's this much now or this much down here. We got, so I'm going, a philosophy of American people in the world of just, you know, can we just be more conscientious? So here we got Tesla doing electric cars with solar panel powered of whatever. Okay, probably better. Plus, I freaking hate working on carburetors and oil and water pumps. And I'm just, bring on the electric. I got 15 gazillion other reasons, even, you know, than environmental. But I'm going, and then you have the global warming thing. Is that true or not? Doesn't matter. I'm just like, can we not damage? We have the technology intelligence that we can not damage, or at least make that a goal. But I want to go a little bit deeper. The actual intelligence of another animal. If we went on to another planet, let's say we find there is dolphins on, you know, on Mars. We found the, you know, it's got a lake somewhere we didn't know about, whatever, you know. So we got dolphins on Mars. We go there with that intelligence and go, hey, we found intelligence, sentient intelligence. We're going to treat them with respect. We're going to treat them. We're not going to go and lay waste to them because we can and we want, you know, whatever minerals in the water and we took it and it's ours now. Would we have a different perspective if they were from another planet? Now, right here, you can sit there, touch, work with, they're here. Then the movie Blackfish came out just recently. I watched it, I don't know, months ago, and it was about the killer whales that they have in captivity at SeaWorld and so on, and how they're really treated and about them. It was terrible. I remember it was March 20th of this year. My wife and I were celebrating her birthday up in Sedona. She went, oh, I want to watch this. I go, no, don't watch it. She goes, I want to watch it. It's my birthday. I want to watch it. I watch it. I go, no, we'll watch it at home. I'm telling you, it's a downer, man. You don't want to watch this now on your birthday. I don't want to do this. We'll go home. We'll watch it later. We did. She watched it. Yeah, damn, you know. So I want to talk to you, Maris, about that. The ability to empathize with the whales. Now, I know you're kind of, it's good PR for, you know, the ocean thing, but I mean, what is it that you, how, what level do you see advocacy for the whales due to their intelligence and their ability maybe to think, or is it different? I mean, how does that affect you?
Well, let's back up a little bit. I mean, one of the really amazing qualities about orcas or killer whales is that they live in family units their entire life. And they have the ability to live up to about 80 years old out in the wild, or the equivalent of a human being. Now, let's go back to that again. When I'm saying they live with their mothers, their sisters, their cousins, their aunts and uncles, in an entire pod and family unit structure, their entire lives, I don't know one single human family that does that. And the only thing that breaks up these family units in the wild is death or capture. And in the late 1960s, early 70s, when all this capture was going on up in Puget Sound, Washington, in order to get killer whales for the oceanariums, that actually has had a drastic leveling effect on that resident population to this day. For every whale that was caught in captivity and put in captivity, many actually died in the process, and it was brutal. And family members, as you saw in Blackfish, I think they showed this briefly, that once they capture an orca or a dolphin, orcas are actually the largest member of the dolphin family. Even though they're called a whale, they're a really big dolphin. So the family members would stay outside of the net or wherever the other animals were captured, and they never left until they were taken away. So I just want to give that perspective on the family unit of these animals. And then on top of it, each different family of orcas actually speaks a different language. So in captivity, when you've got an animal from Spain and an animal from the U.S. and one from Iceland, they're not even able to talk to each other. And these are extremely social beings that are used to being with their families every day, every minute, every second of their life. On top of that, they swim 100 miles a day. So that is what their real life would be, and then you're going to see them in an oceanarium, which is basically the size of a fishbowl.
You know, this is going to, I see it changing. There's going to be, I think, it especially is. From Blackfish, they really, I don't think SeaWorld, their attendance is going to be affected. And I think once they finally give up Shamu and whatever, that they're probably going to have an increase in attendance. And it's all about money, so, you know, they're going to do whatever the public opinion requires. But I'm wondering, is there a free willie movement? I mean, is there an ability? Can these, certainly from a young age in captivity, can they be released to the ocean and survive?
Well, so the key point on releasing an orca is that you need to know their family. Where is their family unit? Because that is the only way they survive in the wild. They've got to be back, you know, with their family.
Have they done such a thing in the past?
Well, okay, so the only whale, you know, the only orca out of captivity that was released was Keiko, because Keiko was the star in the Free Willy movie. But Keiko, they did not know where his family was, because when he was captured, they had no idea what the family unit was. All they know is he was from Iceland. And Keiko had been so imprinted on being in captivity, and because the public was so riled up and wanted a whale released, you know, that's the whale that got released, even though all of us who knew better or had been following the captivity movement or knew the individual whales in captivity, there are better whales that should have been released because we know where their families are in the U.S.
Well, what was the result? Willie, you know, the Keiko, what happened?
Keiko died.
How do you know? They tagged him and...
No, he died of pneumonia out in the wild.
How do they know?
Because they had people watching him every day. There were people that were going out and following his progress. So the key to a successful release...
Find a family.
Is that you've got to know where their family is, and you've got to have them be able to go back in with their family.
Well, the first thing we got to do is just change the minds of the people. Just public opinion.
And that
That's
is happening.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollars being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with a chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, this has been an interesting discussion, something that we should be spending more time on, because I'm looking forward to, with technology and the ability for us to take care of ourselves. We don't have to be, you know... mean. We don't have to be mean to, and it's a lot about us. You get a lot of pushback from certainly people of faith that use the Bible to say, hey man, you know, God gave us the dominion over and kicking, we're the top of the heap, and we gotta go, yeah, so what does that mean? You know, we got so I just think that we should have the discussion not just about using whales as a poster child for let's not destroy the ocean that we need to, you know, like not die. I mean, it's about us. But this could be also a side effect of a much greater understanding of the intelligence that we're dealing with. I grew up as a kid. I'm born in 61. So what's in color in the city? It's Flipper. Okay, as time goes on, and Day of the Dolphin with George C. Scott on how, you know, they can talk and speak, and then you get into SeaQuest where they use Darwin as the one. I mean, I pay attention to this stuff because it's a philosophical thing. It's an understanding of, can we have respect at least for intelligence? Have respect for life in general. You have, you know, like Hindu and maybe Sikh, and, you know, different cultures that, hey man, you know what? We don't have to kill everything. You know, it's not, you know, just lay wanton waste to, you know, whatever. So I'm just going, Yeah, that may be the next evolution of humanity as we increase our capacities to sustain ourselves. Oh, and more healthy. You know, the China study, was it Campbell wrote that? I read that, and he's like, look, man, there's a reason why American Western cultures, and we got processed food of whatever, we are less healthy. All these cancers, all this treatment and crap. I mean, just crap. If we have a different philosophy, maybe we'll be better off. And spiritually, emotionally, you know, we kind of, you know, we're more one with. That doesn't mean that the Native Americans and the Eskimos didn't, you know, kill them some whale, you know, or they didn't, you know, take life, but it was more avatarish. It's like, hey, man, you know, sustaining the people and respect and kind of, and we didn't in, you know, Auschwitz farm up. So this is why I'm interested in this. It makes us better people emotionally, physically, and our environment. So I'm going, it's more than just, you know, save the whales, save the ocean, save the planet, save you. It's in the process do we become better human beings. That was one thing I got from Dances with the Wolves. I remember in the Lakota Sioux, that one thing, the highest attainment was to become a human being. Are you a human being? Yeah, you may, you know, look like one and go around and walk and breathe and kind of, you know, biped and everything, but are you a human being? What is that? Well, this movement, you know, kind of help redefine that and just not be jerks. Pollution and litter and so, but, you know, from my philosophy, a lot of that is protected because governments allow it to be, and people don't have a recourse. No, this amount of pollution is okay. You know, this, you know, oil rig of we kind of, you know, I'm just like, yeah. There's got to be liability. Somebody's got to pay for the damage that's done. Whales, I'm hoping that at some point, it's probably they do communicate. There's no getting around that. It's just, do they have the same frame of reference that we can even understand? Because they have the ability to transmit images and maybe even emotions or feelings without even using words. It could be binary. It's code. It's like all of a sudden an image that they see is transmitted directly into the head of another dolphin. They just, boom, they see what you see. So I'm going, wow, this is awesome. So is there support for intelligence research? You know, is there, you know, Maris, are you having some kind of impact on that to change the perception we have of whales?
Well, I think we do, and especially collectively, all these organizations, you know, that have been working on all different aspects of it over the years. We've been around since 1977, and I feel like, you know, the different groups all kind of have a little bit different angle or a niche. And then we work together, obviously, sometimes on bigger issues collectively. And I really do think that there is a change going on right now. And I do think Blackfish actually helped a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure
it did. It's almost like blowing the lid off like circus animal mistreatment. And bringing that over to the SeaWorld aspect. And I think it's really making people realize that, you know, these big animals confined in these tiny, tiny cages and being, or pools, and being starved basically of any stimulus and nothing to do with their natural life is not a good way to treat other life.
You know, so the people know, and I encourage you to go watch, you know, it's on Netflix, whatever, you can get it, you know, Blackfish, I think it's even free, you know, the what it depicts is what happens when you take a highly intelligent animal, a mammal, and you do what they do to them and how they're treated and so on. How do they not become psychotic? I mean, you know, why, what do you think? You know, they go, oh, they killed one of the trainers. Oh, he killed another one. Oh, it was an accident. He didn't mean to kind of, no, he's pissed. Okay. And there's a bunch, it's just abuse on a wide scale in so many different ways of how they live together. And you're countering their natural instincts of, you know, who, you know, how many males to females do you have and what proximity of who gets defended. I mean, all this stuff, don't care. Here's a couple of fish, do this trick. And I'm going, Yeah, they're not liking it. They're not digging it. And when the people really realize how much they're not digging it, you know, they're kind of, you know, maybe I don't want my four-year-old to go get kissed by an orca.
Or maybe I don't want to go and support this business that treats these animals just as little show pieces. And they're miserable. They're absolutely miserable.
Yeah, no, I'm hip. I'm, should we just let them all go?
That's not what we're asking for either.
What would you do? You put them in a big lagoon of something? What?
Well, there's been these plans, vetted by scientists and people that have studied orcas in the wild about, you know, at the very least, like these giant sea pens. That at least they could be put back into the ocean, perhaps. The ones that are able to be reunited with their families, like I was talking about earlier, that they have to, in order to survive, they've got to be with their family unit. Then those are the ones that definitely, I think, could be rehabbed. And there's a whale named Lolita that would be a perfect whale to be reunited. There's another whale named Corky in SeaWorld. We know her family. We know Lolita's family. And these are the whales that for years scientists have been saying these are the whales that need to be, you know, rehabbed.
And they're not because why? Why are they not doing it? I mean, it's just a money thing?
Yes.
Well, I mean, you know, it's, save the whales, raise the money. Instead of buying an inflatable whale, go buy a real one.
And buy a real one?
Yeah, I mean, how much are they?
Millions. Damn. Millions of dollars.
Well, you know, I mean, maybe crowdfunding of, make that a goal. You know, this one first, we'll go down the list. Or
there are specific organizations that have been working on these specific animals.
You know, one thing, it's always you're not allowed. Well, you know, I tell you what, we found this little inlet. We have a large square miles of, we just run a net across the opening, and even the little thing feed themselves, and we'll have a supply of food at one end just in case of the transition of they kind of, and we just need fence money. You know, it gives, you know, a couple million and boom, we just release it there and we'll start, go from there and kind of, no, you're not allowed, and environmental protection of you kind of in the special interest of no. You know, I'm just, there's always some hurdle when people, like you, come up with solutions that people would support even financially. I'm just wondering, you know, this stuff is going to happen. You know why? Because I just thought of it, and thinking of it just means it happens. That just, you know, because it just happens. So is there any effort like that to take over a bay or something somewhere that's unpopulated?
Well, there's a lot of different, you know, solutions that have been put out, especially for Lolita. Is a whale that was actually captured in Puget Sound. And so they know her family. They know exactly where she was captured and where she lived. She's a really good candidate. And, you know, the state of Washington loves their orcas.
You know, I'm like looking for the ambassadorship to the ocean, and what better than the orcas and dolphin relief? Okay, hey, we're sorry, and, you know, and peace out, and how can we help of doing, oh yeah, bring up your sperm whale into our hangar deck here in the ocean of, we take off the barnacles for you, give you a good scrubbing and a pat on the back and scratch your belly or something. I mean, let's go be ambassadors to the ocean, starting with the whales, and we just make nice.
On Free Talk Live.
There you go.
All right. Yeah, are we out?
Yep. We can go make, let's go make nice with the ocean, starting with the whales. Well, that's another thing, is the harvesting, you know, by other countries and so on. You know, that's kind of a Greenpeace, we're in front of the harpoon kind of deal. Is there some way that you're having an impact? You're doing school children in Japan? I mean, you know, how far are you going with this?
Well, we're not in Japan, but if you talk to, you know, students that come over from Japan, they don't want to eat whale meat. So it's basically the dogma of the, you know, the whole old hierarchy of, this is the way our government does it, this is what we do. And I think that is also a dying industry. I'm hoping when that old set hierarchy dies out, well, this resurgence of,
Well, you have investment.
They don't want to eat it. That's what they tell me.
Yeah, no, if there's no market, you know, problem solved. But it's you have enormous investment in these fleets and these ships, and I'm just
there aren't that many anymore. And the bigger, more scary issue actually in the worldwide whale demise is the underwater naval testing and all the sonar testing.
Yeah.
And people always jump on whaling, and I'm like, honestly, we don't even know how many whales are dying by all the underwater sonar testing.
Yeah, because they're worldwide. Yeah, no, they do this out in the middle of freaking Hawaii and listening to it.
They don't even do it in the middle. They were going to do it in the Channel Islands off of California in a marine sanctuary in the 90s. And we actually took them to court, and it was the first time they had ever been taken to court, and we won.
Well, my thing is that, you know, no matter where you do it, you can hear it across the Pacific.
You're a whale or a deep diving animal, yes.
No, even if you've got a sonar.
Right. Anything. And then in this whole issue, I'm said, you're not even addressing like sea turtles and sharks and fish. It's like, you don't even care about them.
Yeah, I guess it'd be like your neighbor, you know, blaring Metallica, you know, all that you're trying to sleep. I mean, you're trying to eat, you're trying to do anything, and you just got this, I mean, powerful sonic wave. They're trying to see how far they can go. I mean, they're just, you know, it's like a bomb going off. So I can understand that there's so many of these things, but you have to have empathy for other life, and that empathy comes from, you know, identifying with, and how do you do that? Well, what level of intelligence they are? How much can you communicate? What is it? And Blackfish kind of gave a really look into the mind of, you just turn them into psychotic. I mean, you release these animals out in the wild, and everybody's going like, holy crap, man. Yeah, the hell, they probably kill them for just being buttheads. You know, you've been infected by humans too much. So I'm just going, at least stop. You know, just stop. Are they still capturing orcas?
I mean, at the very least, I mean, Tilikum, who is the whale that actually killed Don Branshaw, and that is the whale that they are masturbating and taking the sperm from and doing their stupid breeding program from. Now, tell me, in what realm does that make sense that you're breeding your most aggressive whale to populate other parks all over the world?
Okay, now there's still an expansion of getting, collecting, having more orcas.
No, I don't think that's going to happen, but the way they're getting around that is by doing the breeding.
No, I mean even that.
But the breeding program hasn't been very successful. So I think that's going to die off. I think people are not letting this go, and there is so much pressure that basically Blackfish has blown the lid off of that.
Hey, you think it's had that big an impact?
Yeah, I know it has.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad, because it's about time that Ringling Brush should be phased out and SeaWorld should be phased out.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice and cool, and we get to see the emperor penguin in there, kind of whatever, and I'm going, that probably sucks for them, too. You know what I mean?
All of them.
There's a lot of other things you get, but it's money. I mean, it's just money.
Oh, yeah.
It comes down to just PR, public opinion. That's where it is.
Yeah.
That's where I operate. Hey, you know, I appreciate you coming on. I tell you what I'm very interested you could help me out with. Studies, scientists, efforts, projects in the communication with cetaceans, I would really be interested in talking to somebody about that.
Okay.
So if you got contacts and somebody and they're working on and language of and kind of, man, I'm hip. But a lot of these people doing this kind of research, they're doing it with captive animals.
Right.
You know, so I'm just going, well, can you at least make it voluntary? I mean, go out. I mean, the very first thing is like, you know, it's like the aliens coming down and abducting humans to do tests on so they get to know us better. Well, you know what? You're not knowing us when you got us captive and kind of, you know, butt head.
Well, actually, that's what we when we're talking about the orcas in SeaWorld, I think that's how they must feel.
Yeah, of course.
You know, they're taken out of their home, put in this pool, and then they're masturbated, take blood, feed them dead fish, and make them do stupid tricks. I mean, that is an alien abduction.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if that you could get a lot more from just... See, I even thought as a kid, because I thought of it, it's going to eventually happen, because everything you think of, that's it just happens, you know, sooner or later. And one of them, I'm going, what if you just had, like, you know, a dry dock, or not even dry dock, just a docking hangar kind of come in, and we, you know, start cleaning sperm whales of barnacles. Would they voluntarily come in? Hey, thanks for it. Give them a pet and, you know, peace out. You know, would they do that? You know, I don't know, but it'd be a nice gesture.
I don't know. In certain areas, you know, there's been dolphins that will come in on their own, you know, to visit people, or even dogs. There is a you know, there's lots of stories about that, more usually with, like, dolphins or bottlenose dolphins.
Yeah, no, if you just show the better side of humanity,
right,
with children and dogs and families.
Yeah, and they love that.
Yeah, they'll be like, yeah, cool. You know,
they're like big puppies. They're
and
like
then they
big.
Go and they share their experience, yeah, with everyone. Now, all of a sudden, we're not like scumbags. And it's amazing how many stories through the millennia there were, you have cetaceans saving
exactly
people.
And that is really interesting.
You know, there's never been, that's one thing, a stat that I did not know, that there hasn't been in the wild an attack on humans by orcas.
Exactly.
And I'm going, yeah, if you put them in captivity, they'll kill your ass, though, I'll tell you that. But the, so I'm just going, that's another sign of more intelligence as far as I'm concerned.
Well, actually, and then the other thing in captivity is the whale who committed suicide. She rammed herself at full speed against the side of the tank and broke her lower jaw and bled to death in front of everybody.
Oh, my God.
And that was the whale Candu years ago in SeaWorld. And B, and then the whale Corky, all of her offspring, none of them survived. And I kept saying, she doesn't want them to survive.
Yeah.
I mean,
no,
why would you want a child to grow up in
no,
that?
No, way, way more intelligence demonstrated here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Well, I'm glad that you know, I've always been, you know, oh, save the whale, save the whale, save the whales. I'm like, okay, yeah, why not? I mean, you know, what do we care? You know, I'm like, no whales ever did anything to me. You know, so I'm just, so I've been to SeaWorld and saw the show, went with the children, kind of, and even then I go, it just gave you a respect for them, and you go, wow, that's a big animal in a really small tank. And I had no idea, I mean, this is... I didn't feel and haven't been back. You know, I just meh. So I'm, and it's not just that. I mean, it's others. You got the trained sea lions and all the other. I'm just kind of, I think the zoo thing is kind of going, they go, yeah, but we got a kinder, gentler, here at the Phoenix Zoo. God, what was his name? Coco or something. I mean, one of the gorillas. I can't remember which one, whatever. It was a gorilla.
Oh, you mean the one that talks?
No, that's Coco, but there was another
Coco.
One.
Yeah.
There was another one. I can't remember his name. It was something. It was a double syllable, something like that. But anyway, so you go there, and you see him, and he's intelligent. He's looking at you. He's like, yeah, screw you, man. If I had you, I'd strangle your butt. I'm going, damn. I just, damn. You know, this is, no. So it's a phase that I think we're going through. I mean, it's been the Romans, you know, at least they got to fight for they got to kill some humans in the arena. You know, they're going, I'm gonna get even now. But I'm just, that whole mentality of just bread and circuses and the distraction, when we could aspire to a much higher example, that we could be ambassadors to the entire freaking ocean,
right,
with
and
the ambassadors
entire world.
Well, it's,
I mean,
it, yeah.
Treating things with respect. And
well, I have an ambassador for us. You know, the whales and the dolphins could be, you know, humans, they're not, they're pretty cool. You know, usually we are until they show up, they're curious and show up, and all of a sudden they get a net on them. You know, I'm going, yeah, I'm really glad that I think with the whale spot, what do you think about that? You know, going out and experiencing and the whale spotting, is that, you know, you think that's abusive too, or what?
Well, I advocate that definitely over going to SeaWorld. And what I always think is, is really interesting is SeaWorld is usually on coastal areas. And I'm like, you could just go a little bit farther and go out on a whale boat, and then you'd actually be out in the whale's natural environment, you know. And
yeah, and I'm wondering how they perceive that. They're like, yeah, okay, well, you know, you want, yeah, what's up? Yeah, we don't care. At least you're not throwing a harpoon in us, you know.
So there's, you know, good boat operators and there's bad ones, but at least there's regulations on it. And people, I think, are with their phones and technology, we're also savvy that you'll get caught if you're, you know, riding up too close to the whales and stuff. So,
well, it's also people doing the, you know, paddle boards or kayaking and go out and being, they can easily take you out. But
you need to be respectful on those also.
Yeah, don't be, it's a whale. I mean,
and they're feeding often sometimes, and people go right in the middle, and you're like, what are you doing? They're eating. You know, they're coming up from under the surface, and if you go right in the middle of it, how are they going to stop when they're, you know, coming up to feed? Anyway, it just, the bottom line is respect of animal and other life. And
you know what was surprising to me? I didn't expect, I can see why it's a, you know, it's a marketing or political thing or, you know, what you think you can get away, whatever, is that it wasn't so much about the whales as an intelligent animal as it was as a conduit for support of an entire ocean environment kind of poster child thing.
Right.
And I can see that, you know, that's cool and everything. But I'm hoping that I think it's changing enough that we can start to actually see cetacean and life in general as more of a, we're a lot closer than I think, certainly in intel. I see them as a totally different level, even maybe superior intelligence to us. And they give every indication that they coexist with their environment at a much more peaceful level of families that go around traveling kind of they're not as scumbaggy, warry, destructive as human beings. They're looking at us. God, these parasites on the planet. Holy crap, you know. And we could be a lot better people. And I'm just hoping that that remains a, which is why I want to talk to some people that are dealing with communication with them, preferably in the wild. They can make friends and be ambassadors to the ocean through cetacean. And just, if you got somebody like that in mind, would you send them my way, please, or send us some contact information?
Honestly, I can't even think of anyone doing that right now.
Yeah. Well, it's going to happen because I just thought of it.
All right.
Hey, thank you very much, Maris. It was
You're
a fun
welcome.
Show. Bye-bye.
Bye.